Blog Talk Radio.
Our life to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We you know, we have attitude. We're moody, and we want that fight to land on the line.
Fans, this is the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carlson. We are live on a Tuesday night. Hope everybody's doing okay. We're fresh off a fight weekend that saw a big event in Dallas, Texas, home of the Cowboys, but for one night, and we know Spence, home of Errol Spence, but for one night, Canelo took it over. 73,000 plus in attendance. It'll really be interesting to see what that gate is. I'm kind of interested there. But, you know, was the fight some sort of epic fight? No, but it had the big fight feel. I mean, the stuff before it, the entrances, I thought they did a great job about, you know, with that. So credit to Canelo, credit to Matchroom Sports and Eddie Hearn, credit to DAZN. And you can really tell how many people were pumped that this was like the first full capacity, largest event, especially for boxing. But really in general, I think that there was a big event in NASCAR. We know UFC had, a full capacity fight as well. But this one, like I said, we could talk about the fight, and we will. Some people had it really like tight, 4-4. Some people had it 5-3 for Saunders. Now, I didn't see all that, but either way, it was a big event, no doubt about it. So we are going to start with recap from that. Of course, we'll talk about, you know, some other things. Some people thought Liam Smith should have done enough to earn the victory. We'll talk a little bit about that fight. So, of course, we'll talk about the big event, but also what's next for Canelo. Well, we all kind of know what's next, we assume anyway. This is boxing, so you really never know. But what's next? Caleb Plant, right? Like I said, we assume that. I guess the only thing we don't know is where it's going to land. DAZN, Fox pay-per-view, and all that good stuff. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We do have senior writer from BoxingScene.com, Jake Donovan, coming on in here just a few minutes. It'll just be a little bit there. We're going to talk about what I just mentioned. We're going to talk about what his hunch is for Andy Ruiz's next fight. There's obviously a lot of factors there. We're going to have a little update in the Verdejo stuff, which is, you know, just traumatic, just ridiculous. It's unbelievable. That story, when I first learned about it, Jake Donovan did a great job on that, like he does per usual. But we're also going to talk about this weekend. Luis Nery and Brandon Figueroa should be a fun fight, entertainment-wise, on Showtime. And there are a couple other items that we'll talk about when it comes to fight news or the rumor mill or, you know, of course, we closed the show with our boxing Twitter segment where we just kind of come up with the tweets of the week, whether there's great, yes, I agree, that's a perfect statement, or, you know, some fanboy stuff that kind of makes you laugh, or some media members out there acting like fanboys on their Twitter line, let's put it that way, about a study that came out about younger sports fans that we'll get into a little bit. To an extent anyway, some some positive news for boxing, no doubt about it. The ranking system at the WBO did a little switcheroo. We'll talk about that pertaining to the welterweight division. We do have some audio for Frank Warren's comments recently, and we will read some quotes from Eddie Hearn to kind of balance that out. And, you know, later in the show, I guess we'll talk about Mayweather and Jake Paul and blah, blah, blah. There is some news, though, that came true as far as Teofimo Lopez and Triller bumping their, you know, scheduled or kind of scheduled fight. I think it was just in June. I don't think it actually was June 5th for sure. I don't really know. We'll talk to Jake about that as well. But there is a variety of things we're going to get into, obviously. You know, when it comes to this fight, real quick, just giving my thoughts on it. The first four rounds, you know, there was, I mean, first rounds tend to not be eventful, right? I mean, obviously, you know, Hagler Hearns and, you know, many other fights, whatever. But there wasn't much going on. I thought the left hook to the body and then the right hook and straight right to the body as the fight went on. But that was Canelo. I gave him that first round. Some people gave it to Saunders, whatever. The first three rounds I gave to Canelo. Now the fourth and the fifth is when I started looking at some rounds to give to Saunders. Honestly, I did give him the fourth. Maybe you could give him the fifth. To me, he just, you know, he had his jab and all that going. But until he started jabbing and then landing something in the exchange, like an uppercut, like in the fourth round, he landed some good shots early and late, so I gave him that. Now, you could make an argument that the best shot was that short uppercut of the round from Canelo. So maybe you wouldn't give it to him. The fifth round, another competitive round. I did think some of those left hooks along with the jab with Saunders, you could say, okay, that's good enough. The heavier, better shots, especially several to the body, seemed like it was to Canelo in that round. But I'm good on giving the fourth and fifth or whatever. But thereafter, sixth, seventh, eighth, to me, although there were a few exchanges, like, for example, in the sixth and whatnot, and Billy Joe did land some of his counters. Obviously, a counter is what ended this fight, really. That counter kind of – it was an uppercut, of course, but it was a little different type of uppercut. You know, I guess my point is, you know, I'm not going to just dog on Mannix because I did see, you know, many other people. That'll be in some of our Twitter segments deep into the show. But I saw some folks had him up, you know, going in that last round 5-2. I think Mannix had that too. The farthest I can go off of the eight rounds that we got to see, obviously, before the stoppage, it's like 5-3. I mean, 6-2, that's where I'm at. If you gave him the first round, you gave him the fourth and fifth or whatever rounds, you know, maybe someone, some I did see people give him the seventh or whatever. That's cool. I just didn't see a 5-3 Billy Joe Saunders whatsoever. I didn't even see a 4-4, to be honest with you. I mean, you have four rounds there. Like, some people will use, you know, CompuBox to prove their point, and that's it. You know, CompuBox, you can get something out of that, of course. But to me, the power shots started to the body for the most part from Canelo, and then they did kind of go up top later. I give credit for Saunders. You know, here's the point. Going into this fight, I thought it was very realistic that it could be 2-2 or 3-3 after six. So I'm not one of these folks that thought, Saunders doesn't even have a shot. I actually thought he had a better shot than some folks that I saw and some boxing experts and what the betting lines were saying. So, you know, would I have been shocked if my scorecard read 4-4? No, I wouldn't have been shocked. I mean, I thought he'd take over by then, but like I said last week and in my prediction blog, 2-2, 3-3 wasn't going to shock me. I don't know. 4-2, 4-1-1 after 6, I don't know. You know, that I just can't go 4-4 or 5-3, to be honest. Now, Billy Joe Saunders had his moments. He wasn't moving as much as I thought he did, which probably was a mistake. He did start to move more. His footwork didn't look all that great. There were times where he circled and turned him around a little bit, and there's times where he got him on the rope. By the way, I got to credit him for getting that 22 by 22. I did say, hey, maybe he's just trying to get it, and he did get it. He didn't use it a ton, especially right away. You could see him kind of taking the center of the ring. But overall, I thought he fought pretty well. But this whole, he put on a great, dazzling display, and this was an epic fight. I think that's not correct. I didn't see it anyway. You know, the event itself, like I mentioned, the event before the fight with the ring entrance, you know, phenomenal. I've already given my credit to Eddie Hearn, and obviously Canelo has something to do with getting folks out here. And it's funny because I had a buddy from here that's, you know, pretty much a casual fan. He's never been to a big event in Vegas or anything like that. He's been to the Armory. He went to the Target Center with Caleb Plant, fought on that card that Mike Tyson, you know, on Friday Night Fights, Mike Tyson was one of the promoters and whatnot. But he's never been to a fight, a big fight. And, you know, his parents now moved to Dallas a while back, and so they were going to be in the Texas area. And I was like, hey, dude, just so you know, this is a couple of months ago, like, Canelo was probably going to fight there, dude, you know? And so he went. I had a couple other folks, probably three people that I know from Texas that went, and only one of them have only been to, like, the Cowboy Stadium stuff. They went to one of the Spence's fights, I think the first Garcia, and I think Pacquiao and Mark, I think that's the other one. But you could kind of just tell, not just folks in Texas, but all around the country. And it's too bad that they didn't actually get the UK involved as much. And I understand why, the COVID thing, but that would have made it even bigger. But you can really tell, you know, how people were so anticipating going to an event. So I thought that brought the casuals, whether the viewership and the signups for the subs. I know it did probably well in DAZN in the UK, that's for sure. We haven't gotten any kind of, you know, press release just yet. They've only done that a couple of times. I think the last time they did it, they just did the worldwide numbers. So, but either way, that was great to see that crowd out there. And it's kind of funny. A lot of the mainstream sports folks in America always, you know, boxing's dead. We just got one not long ago in the LA Times. And it's funny, like the first big event back, oh, it just happens to be boxing. And it's a tester, too, for COVID, right? Because we don't want, in the coming weeks, these people go back to their states and then you can link the spread, you know. So hopefully enough people are vaccinated in that place, because to be honest with you, I didn't see a whole lot of masks, you know what I mean? Whereas even this summer during the protests here in Minneapolis, L.A., New York, D.C., Philly, and a lot of those protests, you saw a large majority of masks, you know, then. So outdoor events or just big events, I know this was technically indoor, but huge stadiums like that, I think you should be able to start doing this stuff, like safely. Obviously, they're going to do it. They're wide open. But I really hope the coming weeks sparks off from it, because then it will, the full capacity, I think it will hold some states back from going full, and every state's different, you know, whatever. But anyway, it was, the fight didn't live up to some, you know, I heard an epic fight weekend. No, I didn't feel that. The setting felt like a big-ass fight, because just what it looked like, dude. Look at all the people in the crowd. Was she 17 years old? That's what I heard. I'm not trying to get weird here, but one of the main singers there, I mean, got the whole setup, and all of a sudden Canelo just appeared. That was dope, dude. That was dope. So like I said, credit to Canelo for getting the fans all pumped up. Credit to the states for coming out like that, because you could tell people were just itching, you know, to get in there. And then credit to Eddie Hearn and Matt Sherman, of course, to DAZN. So I kind of gave my take on it. I gave them 6-2, maybe 5-3. But, yeah, I can't see all that 5-3 business that Saunders was up. The bigger, cleaner punches were Alvarez. And, you know, he did an okay job at cutting off the ring, but it didn't really look like he was going for that. You know, it didn't look like he really respected Saunders' power that much. There was that in-between a couple of rounds where Saunders was countering and was landing in exchanges and throwing his jab and landing it. But I just didn't see him control the fight or take fully control of the fight to go ahead and say he won 4 to 5 rounds. That's just my take. But yeah, 5 to 3, come on, dude. I mean, what are we doing here? Anyway, I'm going to go ahead and bring in Jake Donovan, senior writer from BoxingScene.com. You guys all know him, and we all know him to just be a straight up, you know, do his job type guy. What's going on, Jake? How the hell are you, buddy?
Hey, what's going on, Chris? I'm doing well, man. But, you know, I mean, you summed it up, man. It's with each week, it feels like, you know, more and more we're getting back to normal. And last weekend certainly went a long way towards, you know, getting that feeling. So, you know, it's just great to be covering the sport right now.
Exactly. You hit it on the nose, too, because I remember as we closed the last year, we were like, dude, we activated the casuals for a variety of different fights. Oh, my gosh, we really had a good run. And then there was just a lot of talk about fights. How many times have we seen the bottom line on ESPN say, this fight's done, that fight, well, hold on, it's not done. So it's been tough to activate the casuals because even us hardcores are just kind of sick of the talk. Like, when the fight's done, tell us. But other than that, calm down. And that's, I'm not just talking Tyson Fury and Joshua because there's plenty of other fights like that too. But, yeah, man, it, you're right. Even last, you know, week, what, did it make a big dent in pay-per-view? No, who thought it would? But the energy was like, oh, shit, Ariel scored a knockdown. Okay, now we're starting to get going. So you're right. And we do have some big fights coming up, especially in 2 weeks, big fight. Stylistically, we got a fun fight coming up this weekend. And now that Showtime, you know, last time we discussed this, Showtime hadn't put out their, you know, their schedule just yet. So we do have some stuff on the docket. What do you think of the fight itself, and kind of going in, what do you think Billy Joe had a shot to make it an even fight through, say, 6 rounds, or did you think maybe he overachieved a little bit for your perspective?
It's weird. Going in, you know, people kept asking for my predictions, and I don't like making public predictions because I found out, like, you know, just too many people catch feelings over it, so... But privately, I did tell people I expected Billy Joe to be a lot more competitive than people were giving him credit for. And I'm not going to say that he's the type to live up or down to, you know, the level of his competition, because the level of his competition has not been all that. I mean, he had good wins earlier in his career. You know, he beat John Ryder, and he beat Chris Eubank Jr. on the way up. Then he beat, of course, Andy Lee for the title. And we saw what he did against David Lemieux. You know, it was a stylistic mismatch for Lemieux, but we still have to give Saunders credit. But he's had a crappy career ever since then. So, it's, you know, we can't say, well, he's just been fighting down to the level of competition. That's his problem. I always knew the skill level was there. So it was just a matter of, like, I guess how long it was going to take Canelo to adjust before, you know, he finally solved them and then, you know, would just shut him down. I honestly thought the fight was going to go to distance. So a lot of people predicted it, you know, was going to break him down and stop him, which he eventually did. But I think it was more competitive than a lot of people wanted to give Saunders credit for, you know, the type of fight that he did ultimately put out. So I'm not going to say when exactly as I thought it did, because like I said, I thought he would last, you know, all 12 rounds. But I wasn't surprised that he was able to, you know, have some success against Canelo. Just, you know, the way their styles meshed, I knew it was going to take Canelo a while to, you know, to get to that point. And it was, you know, beautiful the way he finished. I love watching Canelo just make these adjustments with each fight. He's been fighting for so long. Yet, you know, with his age, he's actually in his, you know, physical optimal prime. So it's just a joy to watch him, just to see, you know, everything that he's doing right now. You know, he's the only superstar in the sport who's not only fighting but remaining active on top of that. So it's just, that's, you know, as good as you can ask for the sport.
Yeah, well said. You're correct there. A lot of people had a, you know, the problem with his fight in February, but we already knew his schedule, dude. I mean, he already has said he's fighting in December probably too if he doesn't get hurt. So I mean, at some point, you just can't please everyone, I guess. So obviously, like I discussed, like everybody discussing, Caleb Plant seems to be next. What are your thoughts on that? Obviously, Nashville represents, stand up. I mean, a lot of people are sleeping on a certain Cuban based out of Minneapolis, but I won't get into that, Jake. I won't get into that. I'll wait and let him get a couple more wins. I'll wait a little bit longer. But what do you think here? The fact that you assume it's next, there's no GGG that'll sneak up because of the money. Canelo basically seems like, you know, this is what he wants to do. The big question is, where is it going to land?
Right. So here's where I'm at. I feel like, especially from Caleb's perspective, this fight has to happen next. I believe it will happen next because it's absolutely the fight that Canelo wants. So at that point, it's going to get to a point where what's the price tag for Caleb and PBC? And then by that, I mean, you know, do they pay X amount for Canelo to come over and it winds up on Fox pay-per-view, a Showtime pay-per-view, which I do think. I think it will be a pay-per-view fight. Or can DAZN put enough money into the pot where Fox and Showtime won't want to match it, and then PBC says, well, you know what, they're going to put up, let's say, $40 million. We're going to divide up $10 million on our side or whatever. You know, you're going to go fight on DAZN for this one time. So I think it is going to get to that point. It's going to create a bidding war between the platforms, which tells me the fight will happen. And I say that because if Caleb does not take this fight, and I have no reason to believe he won't, but if he doesn't take the fight, I don't see what PBC has lined up for him. David Benavidez is his most lucrative option beyond that, and he's already fighting in August. Jamal Charlo is fighting in June. So if Caleb wants to fight in September, you have to ask, you know, they're not going to give him Andre Durrell. He's not going to, I mean, Anthony Durrell, either Durrell for that matter. But he's not going to go back on Fox and get another $1.5 million to fight a guy where he's going to be a 50-1 favorite. You know, PBC wants him to fight Canelo next. And, I'm not privy to these negotiations, but I know everyone involved wants that fight. I didn't like the DAZN narrative at the end of the show. They already started alluding to, well, if Caleb doesn't want him, we're going to bring in, you know, Triple G. You can't bring in sidebars. Like, Canelo, if he wants to keep Eddie on board, which it sounds like he will, that has to be the starting point. Eddie, go talk to Al. Go talk to Louis DeCubas. The fight I want next is Caleb Plant. I want his belt. I want to become the first, you know, Mexican to be undisputed champion in the four-belt era. So, and Jose Ramirez might beat him to that next weekend, but that's for another conversation. But Canelo will be the first ever undisputed champion in the history of the super middleweight division. You know, there's never been one in the three-belt era, and he's only the second one to hold three of the four titles. Joe Calzaghe is the other. So now he has that chance to become the speed. He wants to make history. This is why he keeps fighting every 2 months, every 3 months. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't want to, you know, wait around, especially another year, you know, for that title. He wants that belt now. So I believe he's going to force everyone to hand. DAZN, I've heard, I think it's Chris Mannix who reported that DAZN is prepared to put up as much as $40 million to earn the rights to that fight.
Ooh.
So that raises the ante.
Ooh.
Yeah, exactly. That's a massive amount, right?
I mean, they just invested in three fights. You think they'd want that fourth fight to do it, you know?
Right. Well, and plus, too, the feedback was that they don't release their numbers, but it sounded like everyone was overwhelmed by the returns from what came last week. And not just the gate, you know, the record-breaking indoor crowd, but DAZN claims, you know, on the subscription side, that they were the numbers they were getting back. And that's for Canelo versus Saunders. And no disrespect to Billy Joe. He's won titles in two divisions. Canelo probably could afford just about anyone for that title. It didn't have to be Billy Joe. Anyone could have held that belt. Could have been your man, David Morrell, you know, in there. I think it would have, you know, produced those numbers. So that's a testament to Canelo to staying active, to, you know, staying in, you know, on everyone's mind. You know, they know, okay, you know, Canelo, another fight, you know, with Canelo's coming up, I got to pay attention. So that's a testament to him. So DAZN is happy. They're in a place where they can afford to go, you know, put up these pay-per-view type figures, you know, to bring the fight over there. So now Fox and Showtime, the onus is going to be on them to present a better package to convince Canelo to come over here. And Canelo, to his credit, he's willing to do that. He's a network free agent. And he can fight on pay-per-view with Eddie involved. It's not like he's going to freeze out Eddie. I guess the uncomfortable conversation would be, well, why, you know, Eddie is already talking about doing Fury Joshua. That's not going to be on DAZN. How do you now explain to DAZN, well, the two biggest stars in the sport are going to fight on our platform next, you know, despite all the money they've invested in his table. So, you know, you get why they want the fight to be on DAZN, of course. Now that's his puppy. But the fight just needs to happen regardless. You know, fans really shouldn't get into what platform it's on. We shouldn't be concerned, oh, it has to be on pay-per-view. You know, Canelo's leaving money on the table. That's for him to decide. You know, if they get to the point where DAZN is going to do the fight, then DAZN goes to fight.
if Showtime or Fox comes correct and say, this is how we're going to launch, you know, we're going to guarantee you, and then you get this pay-per-view upside, you know, then we pay for the fight on pay-per-view. That's what all we should care about is that the fight will happen in September. That should be everyone's focus right now.
Right, and we've talked about it a little bit in that sense. And also just, like selfishly, would I like Canelo to be, you know, the commercials ran with football coming up? Yeah, selfishly, mm-hmm. Sure. You know, that makes sense. That'll help him grow even more and cross over. And some of this stuff that will happen in the post-presser, that'll help him grow a little bit too to the casual fan. But, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
I mean,
yes.
To me, it's kind of all over the place because, man, they just invested however much money he's getting per fight. That's a lot just to kind of like, okay, did you help build up the UK brand enough or you put all this money in these last three fights? Why wouldn't you, you know, go nuts and try to get that? On the Fox side, let's just say Fox side instead of Showtime, do you think, you know, we've kind of kicked around a lot of ideas of what's going on with Fox and the budget. Do you think this stuff earmarked, including the Wilder Fury earmarked cash that they had, that has right. anything to do with them saving up a little dough so they can make this big offer?
That's a good question. To me, that might be overthinking a bit.
Sure.
I do kind of question their long-term commitment. I get what you're saying. I mean, and I want to believe that just because they haven't invested in the sport like they did, you know, and when they signed the deal with PBC in 2018 and then throughout 2019, which, you know, they had a good run right up until, you know, especially with Jermell Charlo and Tony Harrison in the rematch that produced, you know, excellent numbers for the network. It seems like, you know, the content has really, you know, dropped off since then, especially since the pandemic.
Yeah.
You know, we're still waiting for that big fight to come around. So you kind of hope that there is money laying around in the budget. The whispers I'm hearing, that's just it doesn't quite line up with that. But, yeah, no doubt
yeah.
this fight would, you know, certainly, you know, re-energize everyone. My sense is that, I don't know, I think Canelo has a closer relationship with Steven Espinosa than he does with anyone at Fox. My sense is that if it does wind up on PBC's platform, it would be a Showtime pay-per-view. At that point, I want to see, this would be the first time that CBS would actually become fully invested in the sport since, you know, Les
right.
Moonves was me too'd out of a job. You know, they just haven't, they completely dropped off. You know, they had the two excellent fights with Keith Thurman and Sean Porter, then Keith Thurman and Danny Garcia, and then we just haven't heard from CBS ever since then. So I want to see that, and I think that's the type of commitment it's going to take in order for Canelo to, you know, to fight on a Showtime pay-per-view, because I can't see Showtime solely driving that vehicle. It has to be on, you know, on free TV. You know, the build-up has to be on free TV. Everyone has to
yeah.
know about it. It can't just be limited to cable. You know, Fox has that advantage.
The same capabilities. You know, CBS does all the AFC games, so why not promote the fight through them? The
right,
Titans
football is football.
Yeah, exactly. So I know, you know, KP his relationship with Fox, but the Tennessee Titans primarily play on CBS. I know that because I live out here. I have to watch the games from that network. So there's no reason why they
yeah.
can't get involved the same way that Fox has gotten involved. But again, I think everyone, they're going to put their best foot forward. They're not just going to say, well, it's going to be on pay-per-view. You know, here's a dollar amount. You know, take it or leave it. You know, it's Canelo.
Yeah.
He's driving the vehicle. Everyone knows that.
That's right. That is very true. And, yeah, I just – whatever it is, I just want the fight to happen for a lot of those same reasons that you discussed. And in the end of the day,
yeah.
A lot of this is just fodder and talk and kicking around thoughts and all that. But you're right. We shouldn't get so caught
yeah.
up in why it should be – why – or, no, I prefer
right.
this or whatever.
Yeah.
So, Andy Ruiz –
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I did want to bring up on it because people keep saying, too, like they don't care about – they're trying to claim they don't care about Caleb Plant, that they want to see a third fight with Triple G. Where has Triple G been in all this, though? Does Triple G even want that fight next? You know, because I had people come, like, well, how come Caleb wasn't at the fight this weekend? And I know for personal reasons why he wasn't there, but why wasn't Triple G there? If he's the one, if he wants to force Canelo's hand, he's going to be the one that has to move
right.
up the weight. Canelo's not going to move back down to middleweight to fight him. You know, Triple G's going to have to go up there, you know, to try to become a two-division champ. He should be there screaming for this fight. You know, that should have been him, you know. You want to see him go heel and crash a post-fight press conference. Not, you know, I mean, we got it from Demetrius Andrade, but if that's the fight we're building next,
right.
Triple G is going to have to do his part. because we keep saying, oh, well, you know, Saunders didn't earn this fight. Caleb Plant hasn't earned this fight. Well, they have the belt. They have something that Canelo wants. Canelo couldn't care less about a third fight with Triple G. He's willing to do it maybe to please Eddie, but he even said that's going to come down the road. So that's, you know, again, like, I don't want anybody sidelined with this stuff. We have to focus on this is the fight. We're seeing a lot of unification bouts. We're getting several undisputed championship fights. This is the one that absolutely needs to happen next in that. So hopefully everyone could just stay on that course.
Right. Was Ndongo this perfect undisputed fight? Well, yeah, I mean, this stuff happens. This is boxing. And like you said, I mean, Billy Joe Saunders run at 168, getting the belt and after wasn't anything special. Callum Smith, the fight that he fought before, it wasn't all that impressive. He didn't earn this great fight off of a win. I mean, he fought Groves. That was a good win. But, you know, if we're going to say Caleb Truax was past his prime and didn't look great, was Groves, like, right in his prime and not coming off injury? I don't know. Like you said, it's Canelo wants the belt. Same with Benavidez. Like, hey, dude, I hear you, but you know what? Canelo wants the belt. If you would have just kept your belt, he'd want you, you know? So,
right, exactly.
You know,
yep.
It's pretty basic stuff. So Andy Ruiz knocked off some rust, almost got knocked off early in that fight against Areola. Where do you see him turn next? Now, obviously, this plays into this, you know, this stuff going on in court, in a sense anyway, with the Fury and the Wilder and all that. But do you think that they're going to let Wilder fight sometime this summer if it's not, you know, Fury or whatever, however that works out? He just maybe gets some step aside money. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe this ruling, you know, doesn't go his way, whatever. Do you think that take that extra fight to kind of build back Ruiz and maybe take on a Luis Ortiz? Or do you think, hey, we're going to get Wilder fight and then we're going to match it later in the winter? Where do you see Andy Ruiz going? How much do they want to build him back before they put him in with the Wilder?
Yeah, you know, that's a very good question, and I don't even know if it's a matter of, like, fully rebuilding. It might be up to Andy to decide how much more comfortable he wants to get with Eddie. And also, you know, I liked what I saw, you know, with this first fight. I mean, granted, he was, you know, a heavy favorite to beat Chris Areola. He, by his own admission, he has more to go, you know, conditioning-wise. This is, like, the first step towards that. So, but as far as PBC is concerned, I don't know if they're concerned with throwing him in with the Deontay Wilder. I mean, the guy's a former unified champ. You would expect him to be able to sink the swim against any heavyweight. My sense is that, right, you know, he will fight Luis Ortiz. You know, just because Luis Ortiz calls out every heavyweight in the world, and Deontay Wilder is really the only one who has answered the call. So Andy Ruiz is on record saying he wants that fight next. They need to get Luis Ortiz in the ring. So why not, you know, if they're willing to fight each other, that's a good fight to make next. So I hope it's not on pay-per-view. That'd be a great Fox fight for the fall, you know, if they could afford it.
Mm-hmm.
The thing with Wilder, I just don't know, like, you know, we're going to start getting a lot of pay-per-views. It's like, so with that a pay-per-view, we're going to throw into the mix, you know, that I don't know if TBC wants to go there, right? You know, we still have to get Errol Spence back in the ring. Is he going to fight in July? Is that going to be pay-per-view? You know, because they're hoping, I'm sure, that they land Canelo, and that's going to be a pay-per-view in September when he fights. So, like, if you put Ruiz and Wilder in the ring, like, where do you find that? You know, how long do you keep Deontay? You know, Deontay hasn't fought since February 2020. You have to, once this arbitration thing is settled one way or another, he has to get back into the ring. So I think they'll wind up going with Ruiz will fight someone like, you know, Luis Ortiz. Deontay Wilder maybe fight someone like Charles Martin plus whatever settlement he gets from the arbitration. I do believe he will win the arbitration. It's just a matter of if it's going to be a settlement or if it does wind up a third fight with Tyson Fury. I'm leaning towards he's going to get a settlement and then fight someone like Charles Martin on the PBC side. So, and then we also got Adam Kovnatsky and Robert Hellenius. They're supposed to have a rematch. So all those heavyweights, I think we'll see them kind of mix and match while Fury and Joshua kind of figure out what to do with each other. But again, if Fury and Joshua don't fight, then you have to believe that Fury will be fighting Deontay Wilder next, because he, at that point, he will owe him a third fight, and there's no point in having him, in paying him to step aside if you're not going to fight Anthony Joshua, because then Joshua would have to fight Alexander Usyk and then, you know, his other mandatories along the way. So, but it's starting to drift off. But as far as Ruiz goes, like I said, Luis Ortiz to me seems like a perfect next step for him.
Yeah, I really like that fight. It'll be fun, and I really kind of I wrote a blog a couple of weeks ago that I really think we're going to find out about Fox in August. When you look at how the MLB's taking, you know, Friday or June and July every Saturday night, and are they going to line up that four shows and six nights again like they did last August and then see what that is? We still don't have any FS1 stuff, barely. They've had one FS1 card. So, yeah, it where there's smoke, there tends to be fire. We'll see just how big the flames are. Jake, you did a great job on a tough story with the Verdejo stuff. Can we get an update on something that just happened here not too long ago in that case?
Yeah, so today Felix Verdejo for the first time had the opportunity to enter a plea of guilty or not guilty in all of the heinous heinous crimes that he's being charged with. So through his attorneys, he entered a plea of not guilty to carjacking resulting in death, kidnapping resulting in death, and the killing of an unborn child, all related to the abduction and the murder of Keshla Marlon Rodriguez-Ortiz, his longtime lover. You know, they've known each other since middle school and apparently have had a years-long affair, you know, while he was with his, you know, I guess girlfriend at the time and now his wife. So this case is like just really ripped me. I mean, even in the beginning, like what she was missing, like the family, you know, they're pleading, they always sense something was wrong. It's like you naturally fear for the worst. But then it's like every day it's just like, well, my God, how much worse can this keep getting? It's like every day you're reading new details on this case, and it's just horrific. It drugged me down a dark place, and I wasn't even remotely involved in this. I could just imagine, you know, what her family has been going through this whole time. So, yeah, it's just especially reading that arrest warrant Sunday night with all the, you know, what they call it, you know, the facts of the case based on a cooperating witness who apparently was his accomplice. It's just horrific. It's just, you know, everyone keeps saying this is like a Netflix series in the making. It's, you know, maybe it is, but it's just so gut-wrenching. So, but so he pled not guilty today. His accomplice, Luis Antonio Cadiz Martinez, who they named as, you know, the cooperating witness in the case. This is the part I don't understand. They named him as the witness, yet he's also pleading not guilty to this, despite firsthand knowledge of what took place. It's like, well, dude, if you were there, how can you say you were not involved? So I don't know how any of that's going to shake out. I figured if he was a cooperating witness, he would have already struck a deal.
He would have pleaded,
who knows?
But you know, said some sort of guilt, you know?
Yeah. Huh. It's, you know, and it's just so tough, you know? And obviously, you know, it's innocent until, you know, proven guilty, but it's I keep saying to people, even if somehow, you know, Verdejo comes out of this, this is basically his O.J. moment. Nothing's ever going to be the same. You know, the difference with O.J. was already long retired from the NFL, and, you know, he already had an established acting career and the commercials, and he almost kind of lived his life. You know, Verdejo is like in whatever should be the prime of his career, and it's nothing is ever going to be the same. No one's ever going to view him the same way. So my sense is he's going to spend, you know, however long he has left in life, he's going to spend the rest of his life in jail.
Yeah, I you know, like you said, prove, you know, innocent, proven guilty, no doubt. But yeah, it doesn't look, and like you said, looking on the outside, looking in, it's like, it's rough. But yeah, I couldn't imagine. I mean, the thoughts and prayers go out to the family. I mean,
absolutely. Man. So, and you know, God bless them. Just, many people are calling for the death penalty. And obviously, you know, apparently he's a wanted man on the streets too. They've had like his face on coffins in the street saying, you know, we want, you know, this is who we want. You know, he was a dead man on the outside, you know, before he turned himself in anyway. But the family's the one saying, like, you know, if he's found guilty, they hope that they honestly believe he's the one who's responsible for all this. They wanted him to rot in jail for the rest of his life. His father even said he wants him to sit in jail for 100 years and to every day think about what he did to, you know, to get to this point. So they don't want to see the death penalty. So I don't know if the prosecutors are going to ultimately, you know, press for that. But that because it's a federal, you know, case, now, you know, the FBI got involved, the death penalty is very much on the table for three of the four charges that he's being held with.
Right. Yeah, man, that is just so shocking. On a lighter note, although still kind of all over the place, I do remember not that long ago you had talked about that the Triller card with Teofimo Lopez was most likely moving off of that June 5th date, no matter what Teofimo tweeted at Floyd. And now we do have a date, KeithIdick, BoxingScene.com. But that June 19th is it's funky, Jay. I mean, there's two pay-per-views. There's this. It's just a bunch of junk. I mean, I'm not trying. Cambosos, hey, you got your your mandatory. That's cool. I respect that. I don't like that fight on pay-per-view for obvious reasons. But wow, right. June 19th.
Yeah, I mean, I tweeted earlier today. It's like, you know, if you're not fighting on June 19th, it's like, oh, you're really a boxer at this point. It's like I'm ready to announce my pro debut on June 19th at this point. It's crazy. There's, I mean, five different shows all in North America alone. I mean, never mind what other, you know, shows popping up in England or wherever else. But for as crowded as this date is, and like this is, this, you know, you say you want to make a statement, Teofimo is going to become a star. They would have been better off just staying on June 5th because originally that date, it was going to take place at Lone Depot Park where the Florida Marlins play. There wasn't going to be any fans in attendance. So it's like I didn't see any harm in just keeping it on that date. Let Floyd and Logan Paul fight that Sunday night, you know, with their crowd. So now it's moving 2 weeks
right.
later. Now they're going to have a crowd, which hopefully that subsidizes, you know, that the $6 million they've invested in that fight alone. But I wish them well. I just have very indifferent feelings to this whole, you know, thriller project. I don't know what to make of it. You know, hopefully something better comes along, but it's just, you know, even seeing like Michael Hunter pop up on this show, he turned down the fight with
right.
Philip Hergovich. You know, that was a man
for the old WBA
special.
Okay?
Yeah. Right. So he, you know, the winner would have become the IBS man. So and granted, you know, you would have had to wait in line for a while. So now he's going to fight, you know, a no-hoper. And the theory is that he's getting paid more to fight a lesser opponent, that he wanted more money for the Philip Hergovich fight. But, you know, Eddie Hearn was the only one who bid on the fight, so the first bid is what it is. You accept that payday or you move on. He was getting a larger share of the pie than Hergovich because he was the higher-ranked contender. He decided to pass. Supposedly he's getting more money to fight Mike Wilson, which means Triller is investing even more into this card. Then you got to pay Franchon Cruz-Dizern, who's, you know, going to be fighting for the undisputed super middleweight championship. So it's, I don't know. I don't know what their expectations are for this card. You know, Teofimo said he's going to do 2 million pay-per-view buy. Hey, God bless the brother if he can do it. I'd be surprised if it does 200,000, to be honest. But, you know, whatever. The money's in the bank for him. The money's in the bank for George Cambosis. So I wish them well. I can tell you, I won't be covering the card that night. I'll probably be covering at least two other shows that evening. Boxing on ESPN, boxing on the Zone, boxing on Showtime. So, and then you said, you know, Julio Cesar Chavez is the other pay-per-view. So it's just a really crowded night. It's baffling that they went with that date. But I guess, you know, if it wasn't going to be that date, the Florida Commission said they were probably going to wind up having to go in August. So it becomes a matter of, you know, how long do you wait? So that, I guess, you know, just kind of, you know, just bite down and take this, you know, take this date, you know, amidst, you know, a crowd of fights and, you know, I hope for the best, but
yeah.
I don't get it. It's just, I don't, they're not making the statement they want to make.
Yeah, and then no Holyfield. And you're like, well, hold on, isn't that part of the shtick? You know, don't you have to have some shtick here? Like, isn't that the, like, it just, like, I think it's funny, Jay, especially on Boxing Twitter, that some folks don't get that we're happy for Teofimo getting money. Good, man, I get it. You did get lowballed against Loma. Get your money. You did what you did. But does it mean I got to go out and pay? And I'm not speaking for you here, but I can respect what Teofimo did and not buy the pay-per-view in the same bunch. You know what I mean? Because it's
right.
like, well, dude, you know, it's just funny how a lot of people, no, you got to, well, cool. If you want to buy the pay-per-view, don't, you know, everyone has an entertainment value thing, but the entertainment value one on this one is like, so that's your undercard, though? Like,
yeah.
Okay, weren't you the one complaining about the Ruiz Areola card? Well, that undercard has some entertainment, at least. I, you know, it's interesting, though. Yeah, we're going to see, like, the the musical acts are going to really have to push this one through.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and the shame of all this, too, is that we're forgetting, Teofimo Lopez is the fighter, was the 2020 fighter of the year. This isn't
yes.
what you want. This isn't the type of momentum you wanted to see build. You know, the hope originally was that he was going to fight in the, they were supposed to fight in the string, that, you know, they're going to get these investors to bring the fight over to Australia, you know, where Cambodia is supposedly
yep.
a big draw. So this could have happened
right.
in August, I mean, in April, and then he moves on to the second fight in the summer, and then hopefully fights the winner of Josh Taylor and Jose Ramirez you know, to end his year. You know, his goal was to become, in his mind, a two-division undisputed champion and then, you know, become 2021 Fighter of the Year. None of that is on the table. And now all he has is a mandatory fight. It's probably going to be his last at lightweight, which means obviously he's not going to fight to Devin Haney, Ryan Garcia, or Tank Davis. He's going to move up, you know, probably to 140 in his next fight, not get a title shot, you know, at the Undisputed Championship.
Right.
So it's just, it's like wasted momentum. So it, and boxing can never get out of its own way. Again, this is a guy, you know, we should be celebrating his Fighter of the Year run, and instead we're just like waiting for him to get back in the ring, and there's really no value. It's like, why are we going to pay $50 to watch him fight when there's so much other boxing on that night? So, you know, I sense all we're going to get out of this night is another Triller lawsuit. You know, Triller's already suing people. You know, they want them to pay up for, you know, all those people who stole the April 17th event. That's all that's going to happen in June as well. I mean, they're going to be, you know, more legal threats. Maybe they'll do a better job of piracy, but all that means is fewer people are going to watch.
That's exactly what it is. Any other items, Jake? I don't want to hold you too long. Any other items you want to touch upon, or do you think that we handled it?
Well, you know, it's funny. You're saying, well, you know, we want to see what's going to happen with Fox. But my understanding is that they're trying to finalize those last few main events to announce, you know, it's not going to be as in-depth as Showtime's, you know, nine-card rollout that they had, but we're supposed to hear something from Fox hopefully soon. You know, I mean, they got fights that are going to be coming in July and on both sides of the Olympics, if you still have an Olympics. So, you know, there should be some good news. Your man, David Morrell, who you referenced, he is supposed to be fighting John Lawrence. That's going to be a mandatory defense. A weird date of June 26th was offered, but I don't see how that's going to be a Fox show if Gervonta Tank Davis is fighting on pay-per-view. Maybe they kind of do what they did with Mayweather and Conor McGregor, where they had the Fox card with Ugas and I believe it was Thomas Salome, you know, leading into the Showtime pay-per-view. But we haven't seen that cross-promotion, you know, that cross-network cooperation between the two. So I don't know. Maybe that's what we get out of that night. Or maybe Morrell fights on FS1. Who knows? But I'm not sure if that's
the FS1 Minneapolis Armory special, Jake.
Hey,
that's what I'm pulling for.
I'm all for it.
FS1 Armory, baby.
Right. But you know what? We go back to Canelo and Caleb Plant. It's like, as long as the fight happens, who cares? I mean, it could be on the Food Network.
Right.
It's still, I love that fight. Because it's a good step up for David Morrell.
True.
You know, it's weird. Record-wise, he should be in the prospect stage of his career. But, you know, I think a lot of people would pick him to beat John Ryder, which is a testament to his skill level because Ryder is generally a top 10 contender.
Solid.
So, so we'll get that Fox schedule, you know, hopefully soon and, you know, some more good news to come in the sport.
You know what? The Food Network would be the best lead-in they could get in, too, dude. You know what I mean? That'd be a hell of a lead-in, Jake.
Yeah.
All right, buddy. Thanks for joining us.
Promote Andrew Ruiz
back.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That would be, that's perfect. That, man, we're figuring all this stuff out, Jake. We got all this marketing stuff figured out. All right, buddy. I appreciate you taking time out, man.
All right. Thank you so much for having me on. It's always a pleasure.
Yes, sir. All right. You know the name, Jake Donovan, BoxingScene.com. He's senior writer there. Everyone knows him. I just like to repeat it. Solid, solid, solid reporter. And, you know, maybe he'll hurt your feelings once in a while on Twitter. Everybody gets a little hurt on Twitter. But, you know, he just does his job, man. And he does it very well. All righty. I did forget this part. If this is your first time listening to the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoperadio. You don't have to go to blogtalk and ropeadope and download the show directly there or listen to it in the browser if you don't want to. You can find this here Ropeadope Radio platform on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spreaker, almost all across the board. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which can be found a whole lot of places. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegrillingchute.com. It's boxing, football, basketball, baseball, everything in between. And one more thing, if you're thinking about cutting the cord, or you have, you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called AT&T TV. The plans start as low as $69 a month. Simple pricing, no hidden fees, no annual contract. Stream it anywhere on any device. Of course, they have the cloud DVR available. And if you sign up for the choice package, you get a free year of HBO Max. Okay, we're going to go from one great boxing mind to the next here. We're going to bring in John for his segment and see what he thought of this weekend and what's going on coming up this weekend in general. What's going on, John? How you doing, man?
Hey, Chris. Great to be here as always. We enjoyed just listening to you and Jake finish up Jake's segment, and I'm ready to step into the ring and talk some boxing.
Heck yeah, man. That's why we have you on here for sure. You know, with this fight here, obviously, you know, when we hear like epic weekend, you know, that has to do more with the crowd, right? In the display that was before the fight and all that, it did have that big fight vibe to it, no doubt about it. I mean, that just is what it is. No matter what people think of this, that, and the third, it had a vibe. 73,000 in attendance. I am really interested to see what that gate number will be. So the look of it was great. Now, the fight itself, I was one of those guys, like I mentioned earlier, that thought it had a good chance to be 2-2 or 3-3 after 6. I didn't see that in the ring. I saw maybe 4-2, 4-1-1 or something like that, 5-2, or let me see, 6-2. The farthest I could go is 5-3, of course, for Canelo. But I saw a whole lot of 4-4, whole lot of 5-3 for BJ Saunders. What did you think of the fight? Did Billy Joe perform better than you thought or kind of right in between? What would you think?
I saw it just the way you did, Chris, and he performed really about exactly like I figured, with the exception, and I tweeted this out after the fight, this to me was a mystery part that I had no necessarily reason to feel strongly either way, but we saw Saturday night, Saunders did not respond to adversity. Now, you know, this is actually becoming kind of a controversial subject because of the brutal nature of boxing, and you and I can get that more into depth on that. But the way I saw it was I didn't necessarily assume that Billy Joe Saunders wouldn't respond if he was in that kind of adversity well, and I didn't assume that he would respond well. I just felt like I didn't know. You know, what I talked about last week in my evaluations of him over the years was, and, you know, you and I did talk about this in detail last week, he was a guy that was overly cautious and afraid to engage. In other words, we saw that actually in his mentality, in his fights. And I brought out the example that I thought, you know, he was embarrassing David Lemieux, really had the guy ready to go late in the fight, and just would go to the finish, and even had a corner that was telling him to not go for the finish. We also saw in the Andy Lee fight, he dropped Lee twice in one round and made absolutely no effort to finish, slowed up very much so in the second half of the fight to the point that I thought really there could have been an argument for the decision for Lee. And why I mention all that is there were signs before this that he didn't have an aggressive mentality, but, you know, he wasn't in serious trouble where he'd been dropped a couple of times or hurt or been cut severely and, you know, did respond in the past or did respond well. That was just kind of a mystery. And I think what we saw was the first real taste of adversity he had in his career. That was it. He was done, and that ended up resulting in a stoppage win for Canelo, where the way I thought the fight would go, I was giving Saunders the benefit of the doubt there, and I thought if Canelo put him in a little bit of adversity or pressure – that he would still be very cautious and have enough skill to go the rest of the way, and he did not.
Yeah, there always is that debate of, you know, I mean, a lot of people, you know, showing images of former fighters with huge, you know, eyes swollen out. And obviously, swelling is a whole lot different than an eye socket and a cheekbone and all that. And we could go back and forth on, oh, he's a quitter, oh, he's this, oh, he's that. I mean, they obviously did retire and quit. But, you know, the thing is, if he goes in there and gets his eye all messed up even worse, and you know, has partial, you know, sight or no sight, you know, then all of a sudden people are like, oh my God, you step back and this. But, you know, I don't know. You would have liked to seen him try to fight with it like some other fighters have, but it's really easy to sit at home cracking a beer saying, he's a wimp and he's this and that. You know, we've seen bad fights, you know, like even Kell Brook went a little bit longer with his, with a very similar injury. And, you know, I don't know. It is what it is. My thing is, though, Billy Joe Saunders, you know, prior to this fight has a lot of words, you know, and so I don't mind some of the talk towards him, because he's talking about, I mean, here's a quote, you know, if my two eye sockets were broken, my jaw was broken, my teeth were out, my nose was smashed, my brain was beaten, I was not stopping until I was knocked out or worse. You know, drag me out. Let him drag you out, and the things he said to Du Bois and all that. That's where I'm like, well, you know, you reap what you sow in that one. But I'm not going to sit here and complete, you know, to say, I don't know, the whole first, like, at first sight of adversity, well, that is a little bit more than just a cut, you know, or a swollen eye. That is, you know, maybe the trainer did feel, the cut man did feel the rupture in his cheekbone or whatever. Where do you stand with this stuff? Because we have seen some fighters go through some things in a ring where you're like, this guy's psychopathic. I can't believe he did it. We've also seen some people have some permanent damage.
Yeah, Chris, I think this is a really tough and interesting subject. And even though, you know, I've said that I saw Saunders, I felt like this was his first real adversity in his career, severe adversity, and he didn't respond. But, you know, I do want to elaborate because I don't want it to seem overly harsh, but then again, I think we need to look at all sides of the subject. So let's look at a few things. First, what I would say is this. You know, watching the fight live, when I saw Billy Joe Saunders go back to the corner and looking at the eye, and when his corner was first taking a look, the eye looked very bad. The eye looked shut, okay? So no dispute in my mind about that. I think in fairness we got to say that. But I just want to add some things here that I think this subject, for some of the people then want to say, I perfectly understood what Saunders did, and I don't think anybody should get on his case.
Right.
And look, I'm not bloodthirsty. I don't want people blind. Let me be clear on that. Boxers take tremendous risks. They literally risk their life. They risk their brain. They risk their eyes. They risk all kinds of things. And I think that's part of what we got to add. So let's look at some things, though, that we do know logically. There's been enough discussion of this week. It's worth getting into really in depth and really getting in the weeds on it. The ringside doctor didn't stop the fight, right? We've got a ringside doctor for a reason. And we've heard a lot of talk in recent times about corners stopping fights and things like that. And, oh, the corner's got to do that. Like, well, let's hold up a second. It's the referee's job to stop the fight. That is the referee's job, period. Matter of fact.
Yes.
And Holmes Cooney was the most famous example of this probably in boxing history. You know, there's, you know, and I don't even sure where all the commissions exactly stand on it now, but you look at Holmes Cooney being the most famous example. Victor Valley jumped in the ring to stop the fight, and they did stop it, but the Nevada rule at that time was that the corner could not stop the fight because they were worried about gambling influences, and they wanted the referee to just do his job, technically, for Holmes when the fight ended, because Valley jumped in the ring to stop the fight when Cooney was in trouble, but the referee didn't. Then the referee stopped it when Valley jumped into the ring. It was technically a disqualification. Now, why I mention that is, it's clear that especially and traditionally, sometimes for these types of reasons, it's the referee's job to stop the fight. It's the ringside doctor's job. Now, again, you want to be more nuanced. The ringside doctors are not always specialists. A lot of times they are people just interested in the sport that then the commission happens to appoint them to fights. But the fact is, you've got a ringside doctor at every fight. We know that. Nobody's discussing this. The referee didn't stop the fight. The ringside doctor didn't stop the fight. And I'm going to say I didn't go back to the rewatch, so correct me if I'm wrong, if people have, and I know people have been rewatching already. I'm going to say I watched live. I didn't rewatch. My recollection just on the one live watch was Saunders, and the corner always wants to protect the fighter's ego, the fighter's image, and certainly the promoter does even more. What I saw when Saunders went back to the corner, and in fairness to him, the eye did look very bad, but the first action I saw when he went in the corner and sat on the stool and they started looking at it and talking to him was he shook his head, that's it, okay?
Right.
I don't want any more. Now, Tibbs, the corner man, I think protecting him is saying he stopped the fight. Now, there's another nuance.
And he didn't fight it either.
Right.
We've seen plenty of pushing and shoving. Look at Diego Corrales to his own trainer. You know, like there's a lot of different examples of someone saying, no, dude, I'm fine, and standing up and ready to fight.
Right. Now here's another thing I want to get into that's nuanced. I've discussed, maybe tweeted about this a little bit over the years, but not a lot in detail, and I think we're getting into a good subject here that I think this is worth bringing up again. In the legal profession, okay, if I represent plaintiffs, you know, in my other job, of course, my job as a lawyer, but you know, so you have injured plaintiffs, okay? If I were to go to a corporate defendant, an insurance company, a judge, and there are standards on this. In other words, and I were just to say, let's pretend for a moment it was an automobile accident that I was, instead of it was Billy Joe Saunders, it was Billy Joe Smith, and I was representing him in an auto accident, okay? If I've got a picture of that eye, and it legitimately looks really bad, and everybody can see that, and I'm arguing to the corporate defendant or a judge, and I'm saying, Mr. Smith has a shattered eye socket. It's horrible. He might go blind. This is a possible blinding injury, and he's going to have to get surgery in 6 months. You know what I've got to do? I've got to produce expert medical testimony that says that. I've got to put the person up for a deposition. I've got to either provide medical records or give a medical authorization, and that's got to all be reviewed by the other side, or it may be a case where it's the court, and the doctor has to testify to a reasonable degree of medical certainty that that's the injury. So then you think, well, John, why are we talking about all this? Well, what I'm saying is because what we've seen in recent years, promoters, to me, have gotten in a bad habit of this, and I think it's look at it as the fighter being their asset and protecting their fighter's marketability and image for the future. Every time somebody's got a situation like this, and I'm not saying whether it's true or not, all I'm suggesting to people simply is we don't know if it's true or not. In other words, when an Eddie Hearn comes out then and says he just went to the hospital for a shattered cheekbone and a shattered orbital bone, and then you've got all these boxing Twitter people and even a lot of writers, and frankly, some of them probably in good faith because they're not looking at it with these kind of standards, saying, oh, right. Billy Joe Saunders has a broken orbital bone and a cheekbone. How can you say that? Well, you know what? The promoters are going to say that all the time. The fighters have their own interests. I'm not saying it didn't happen, but I'm also just saying if you're not seeing medical experts testify or you're not seeing – and look, a fighter, of course, has an interest in not letting his medical records out because he's got future fights. He might not want to show a weakness. He might literally want to keep something private. That's understandable.
Good
but then
point.
when people then start saying, though, it's a certainty that this guy had all these shattered cheekbones and orbital surgery, even if there was a surgery, you don't know what that surgery exactly was for.
Right.
You don't know what the doctor did. All I'm just saying with this stuff is we don't know. We know what we can see in the picture and what we saw in the fight, and then you're just hearing things. But
It wasn't the doctor pushing down on that eye, feeling a cave-in, you know?
Right. That's what I'm saying, all this stuff. So, what I'm saying here is we don't know. And I'm saying, look, I'm not saying Saunders didn't have all that. I'm just saying we don't know. These are things that when people then start saying it's a certainty and you've got promoters protecting their assets and fighters have certain things that they want to protect and images. I mean, it seems like promoters in recent, you know, people say it shouldn't be a shame to quit and all things like that. Well, you know, the promoters are very, very apt to describe injuries as being horrific as soon as somebody does call it a night.
As long as their guy, plenty, too.
Right,
because Eddie had plenty
guy,
to say
right.
about Daniel Dubois. He wanted to see the x-rays and stuff with Daniel Dubois, you know?
Exact. That's the point. I think people are missing all this. And then this something is a moral question there's no answer to. And I might be sounding like I'm taking a bloodthirsty side. And believe it or not, I'm not. I'm just kind of trying to raise – I think there's a lot of deeper issues mm-hmm. here. Is it going to – you know, and this has been discussed, believe it or not, for decades with different times when there are calls against the sport and things. You know, you could turn it into fencing. You know, people just touch each other with punches. There's no objective to hurt. You know, in other words, some people who are quick to condemn people to say, well, I didn't like Sanders' performance. Well, when a fighter gets knocked down and they don't get up, I mean, a knockdown is a concussion, a head injury. There's actually, we know now there's no dispute about that, okay? We know a lot more about the brain. They're finding out about CT and things like that. So some of these people, same people who would be saying, what do you want Saunders to go blind? And how could you even say he should go out there, get with the times, would be the same person that would say, if a guy went down once and he shook his head, I don't want anymore. Oh, he's got no heart. He quit. Well, I could submit that a brain injury might be more risky than a small
sure.
bone fracture somewhere. I'm saying it's a brutal sport. We know that. And you don't want the brutality to get out of hand. You do want to protect people. But I think people, when they get into these, they got to be careful about what the nature of the sport is. I think another thing you can tie in that's very controversial, and I don't know, nobody does, but and even an expert will tell you, we don't know, we can never say for sure if CTE made a person get violent. We just know that these can be symptoms, and we're looking at the brains of people who became violent, you know, who mostly it's been with ex-NFL players, and we've seen that they had CTE. You have a 27-year-old like Verdejo. When Aaron Hernandez hung himself, he was 27. We know he had CTE. Now, if Verdejo did commit this horrible crime, no one can say, even if it turns out later on he had CTE, that that made him do it. Though we know that these can be things that may be symptoms of CTE, you know, the personality changes, the violence. This guy
right,
was a
sure.
boxer who'd been knocked out a couple times. You know, we have people, and there's no doubt this crime, what happened to this poor woman was horrible. And Verdejo, you know, is being charged. But for then ignoring the issue that the guy got hit in the head for a living.
Right.
You know, I'm just saying you can't, it doesn't mean you could say for certain that even if he had CT, it caused him to do it. Even the experts are going to tell you can't. But these are things that people got to watch. They got to understand that these are deep, nuanced debates now with what we know more about sports injuries and what damages sports can cause. And with all these issues, people I think have to kind of look at the big picture. The picture is a lot bigger than people may realize.
No doubt. And even I spoke to this on Twitter as well after the fight that. Even the internal damage that a body shot can do to you. You know, we've heard people pissing blood and all that. Like, let's not forget about the, you know, the inside, how your insides are from some of these body shots. And so, yeah, there is a variety of stuff. And some guys, and now gals too, of course, like, they just go with, like, they just have a different mentality. You can say this or that. Some people make maybe not a great decision and stay in a fight and end up hurting themselves worse. Some people win the fight, you know. So it's yeah, you're right. There's no clear-cut way and until you actually see the proof. And that's what bugs me, and that's why I brought up the Eddie Hearn. I mean, credit to Eddie Hearn, you know, in this event. He had a lot to do with the opening of the entrance and all that. But, like, you know, he did – he was quoted talking about Danny Dubois, but then he's ready, like he saw the x-rays. Like, how do you know? You weren't at the hospital right then and there. Like,
right,
he knows some information.
Exactly.
You weren't doing the surgery. You could sit there and Google what bones are in your face. You know, like, that's pretty easy. So, and then I see, like, an x-ray, you know, online. I'm like, who's this? I can't tell if that's Billy Joe or not from an
exactly.
x-ray. Like, you know, like, come on. There's no... You know, I don't know. It just, but yeah, the thing about Billy Joe Saunders, no matter how we stand on this, when you talk a bunch of trash, especially not just what I'm going to do to this fighter, but other fighters who quit or decided to retire, however you put it, that's where I can't really feel too bad for him because, hey, you know, some people, you know, everyone needs to be humble at some point. And I actually believe he will address those things at some point, and I think he'll go, hey, you learn a lesson, blah, blah, blah. I actually do think he'll do that. A lot of people probably don't think he'd do that, but or maybe he'll go detailed and get defensive and say, yeah, but I had four different bones, or, you know, who knows. But moving on, Canelo against Caleb Plant seems like it's a fight, whether it's on Fox, whether it's on pay-per-view, whether it's on Showtime, CBS pay-per-view, like Jake was just talking about earlier in the show, or whether it's on DAZN. I mean, damn, if you look at overall, they've made a healthy investment in DAZN or in Canelo, and they've already told us a while back that the majority of their subscribers are from Los Angeles or in that, you know, Southern California area. So it is key to keep Canelo, and that's why, you know, Virgil Ortiz, if they can hang around on Golden Boy or Ryan Garcia, that's why Mikey Garcia was key to them, to try to not only gain subscribers but keep them when Canelo doesn't fight. But it just seems like they put a lot of money into these Canelo fights. How many rounds has he lost in these fights? And that dates back to the Jacobs fight too, which I didn't think was all that close that some people did. I thought that was more 9-3 or whatever. But you'd think that they probably are going to make a pretty damn big offer here. Even Jake, I heard the rumored $40 million, 30-10. Jake kind of talked about that as well. Let's not – I mean, we could talk about what we want in Fox. You know, I thought Jake made a good point about CBS too. You know, whether it's Fox or CBS, we've just seen Fox push fights more than CBS, but they do have football, and I think for – or NFL, obviously, and I do think for another year they have the SEC. Then I think that goes away. ESPN and ABC snatched that up smartly. But, you know, we can talk about that part of it, you know, and how that helps Canelo cross over more and all that. So we can you can speak on that. I know you have a little bit in the past. But also, where do you rank Caleb Plant's chance of winning more rounds? Notice how I didn't say necessarily pulling the upset comparatively to – say a Callum Smith and a Billy Joe Saunders.
Yeah, that, good subjects, Chris. First on the who would broadcast a Plant Canelo fight and what it would mean for boxing, the sport. I'm at a point now where I have some mixed emotions, and it kind of fits with what you said. In terms of, I don't think widespread appeal, but in terms of, you know, combat sport fight fan type appeal. You know, DAZN might be finding their groove slightly better with this, you know, we've discussed it, the yearly plan, and they give you the Canelo fights being a better value. So my concern when DAZN got started was just for the health of the sport, and I think that this still applies. DAZN is not announcing, you know, how many people watch the fight and their subscription numbers. And with modern technology, with streaming and apps, those numbers are concrete. It's just like the sound scan era when it came to music. You know, they used to have these wild speculations, which in probably in the 70s and 80s, people don't want to accept was probably all bullshit numbers. But
right.
You know, when the sound scan came out with the price code, they knew exactly how many they were selling. And they know that even more now with, you know, like Apple Music, you know, they actually know how many people are streaming the songs. It's not like speculating what some radio station's playing anymore. So why am I talking about that with DAZN? I am because the Zone and ESPN, they literally know exactly how many people are watching those fights. They know how many people in the U.S. watched that Canelo Sanders fight Saturday night, but they're not telling us, and they won't. So it concerns me because I think for the sport, my guess is those numbers are probably not particularly high. I guess they probably have less than 1 million subscribers. And even if most of them are on for boxing and combat stuff, just the way the world works, even for a Canelo fight, when people who don't know about these things want to think, well, every subscriber they have watches the Canelo fight, it just doesn't work that way. It just doesn't work that way. You just don't hit those kind of percentages. People have things to do. And so that's the part I don't like about it. In other words, I can see people who like the DAZN thing now saying, which I even have been liking this, and I know you have too, hey, we buy the yearly, we watch a lot of fights. It's something more we got to pay for, but when they're giving us 2-3 Canelo fights a year that we don't have to pay another $100 for, we're kind of liking that part of it. But what I don't like for the sport is there's not many people in the U.S. seeing it. And I think even since that Saturday night, like you said, the stadium Hearns does a good job with his atmosphere at the fight. I've credited him with that lately. I think he's been doing a good job, including with Canelo. Live attendance was good, in AT&T Stadium, you know, the house that Jerry built's a good show. That stuff's all good. And, you know, a lot of the hardcore types are talking about it. Like you said, I agree with you, had a big fight atmosphere, but I'm just sensing that not that many people are seeing it. Like my brother's a former hardcore fan that because of things that happen with boxing, he's been tuned out for a while now. But then I kind of like to use him as a barometer because he's not even a guy that's like a cat. He's at this level, not followed even as a casual, but he was a hardcore, so it's not like a casual fan. And, you know, he hasn't been tuning in, including Saturday night fights like that. You know, he watched Canelo Golovkin 1 with me, which was still back in the pay-per-view days before he hit the Zone, and he enjoyed that. But I'm just saying, I'll use some things like that. We all have them with our friends and stuff. But since my brother's a former hardcore fan, I'll use that as a barometer. And you know, I was telling him some about it, but he wasn't tuned into it. And I don't sense this one went much outside the boxing fan community.
Yeah.
So why I'm prefacing all that, because it leads into what I like about Fox, or if Showtime's going to get it and promo it heavy on CBS, like you mentioned and Jake was mentioning. I mean, that to me, people didn't get into arguing with you, but I don't like having to pay, but I still think it's, even though it's pay-per-view, I still think it's better for the sport because you got more promo and probably more people are going to end up watching it than on DAZN. And people say, what are you talking about? It's on pay-per-view and, you know, it might be $75, but I just think that's probably or the numbers will be close and it'll get a lot better promo, you know, coming from network, and Plant's been seen on network. So it kind of feeds in. In other words, I think the problem is, I think the Zone likes him for this reason, but the problem for Plant's career is the payday with Canelo is great. And that's like winning a lottery ticket, but I'm not even kidding around. You actually fight on the Zone and there's probably not a hell of a lot of people that are going to see you fight. I mean, in other words, people who don't follow TV numbers don't want to hear this stuff, but it's just reality. You know, he can fight a Feigenboots on regular Fox, and more people are going to see him fight than see him fight Canelo on DAZN. And I'm not even kidding around. That's just in the U.S. now. You know, we're not talking worldwide, but in the U.S.
Of course,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, so I'd like to see something. Canelo Plant, to me, is a possibly big-selling fight because Plant's done pretty good numbers. He's got an interesting story. You know, Canelo is you know, the biggest star in boxing, and this English-speaking Canelo is a hit, which we can talk about, too. It's almost like he's got a new star. English-speaking Canelo is almost like this new star. So we've got this new star in English-speaking Canelo, and we've got Caleb Plant. That, to me, is the type of thing that can get to whatever you would call a casual fan nowadays, at least some of them. And to me, Fox or Showtime CBS has got a lot better chance of doing that than DAZN. I'm sorry, even with a pay-per-view. I just think that they do. So on one hand, personally, I like not having to pay more on DAZN. But for the sport, I just feel like there's a much greater shot at wide exposure if it's on a Fox pay-per-view type deal with Fox promo or a Showtime CBS promo pay-per-view deal.
Yeah, it'll be interesting how this plays out, because like I said, man, the investment number that we don't even know the exact number of all his purses, but I mean, we used to, but they put a lot of money up. So it's like, they're probably going to put another big chunk up in. And we talked about how, you know, if Charlo's going to go to the zone, it's going to be for Canelo. If Benavidez, it's going to, you know, it's the same thing. If Plant's going to go to the zone, it's not going to be for Billy Joe Saunders. It's not going to be for Andre. It's going to be for Canelo. Speaking from a PBC Al Heyman perspective, and a lot of people won't like to hear that. I get it, but business is business, and you have a deal, and you have certain expectations that you have to meet with that deal. So you can't just go renting out fighters left and right unless it makes the most sense, which this would. And it does sound like, you know, his people say, hey, whatever's the best, we're going to do. So, and that'll be part of it. Like you said, that'll be part of the spiel too. And just the marketing and the energy around it. And the fact, like you said, I mean, he's been in front of a large audience now this last couple of years for three fights, really a fourth, a pretty decent one on FS1 originally. So he is out there, and I like to kind of call it the common boxing fan, not the hardcore, not, you know, there's a lot of common fans on boxing Twitter that swear they're hardcore, but maybe not the casual where they only know Mayweather and Pacquiao, maybe know Canelo because he fought him or whatever, but that common fan that keeps up with boxing, has a handful of favorite fighters, that's the ones that I think will be more, you know, activated in this. And then, like you said, the long term, whether it's Canelo or Plant, especially if they put, you know, good highlights on after the fight for people to watch, because that's what it's about too. You see it in the numbers sometimes. I think that just plays longer, having ads run on CBS during football or Fox during football. And we've kind of seen that work out. You know, even not during football season, when you look at the possible numbers for Ruiz Areola, that's kind of close to like Kovalev Ward and stuff like that, and Golovkin Saunders and Jacob. And like, that's not that far off of that. So you're like, and those were big-ass meaningful fights, not just a random fight that we want to see because of action, and he's coming back. So, yeah, it's all put in perspective. This weekend, Luis Nery and Brandon Figueroa. Nery has been a guy that seems stuck between styles. I feel like he's going to kind of revert to his old, maybe a little bit more careful. A little bit more responsible, but still kind of spaz out against Figueroa. I like him in this fight. He's a pretty clean favorite. How do you see this fight breaking down between Nery and Figueroa on Showtime?
Yeah, Chris, this is one I've had some mixed feelings, a good fight, but mixed feelings about my pick on, and here's why. I've started watching Brandon Figueroa, you know, really very, very early on his career when PBC was showing him on undercards. And it has been interesting seeing these PBC guys develop, not just because they're PBC, but part of the intention. You know, you saw these youngsters on network TV early, kind of like the old days, getting exposure. Brandon Figueroa was one of them. And you watched them work their way into bigger fights. And now he's headlining on Showtime against, you know, Luis Nery. And I like him, you know, a tall guy for the weight, started as bantam, then he's been fighting at 122. And, you know, was a guy in a way, you know, he's got a little bit of that, like Fundora, who also came up with PBC, but like a Fundora, a Paul Williams, a Riddick Bowe. Here's, you know, different fighters at different weights. But the guys we've talked about who could, and a lot of people would say should be fighting tall, but either by choice or for some other reason, because they don't have confidence in their other boxing skills, whatever the case may be, they have chosen to fight in close, with a good volume of punches and power punching and leaning on their opponents. You know, that's Brandon Figueroa, very tall for the weight, but chooses not to fight in that style. And I found him entertaining like that and bringing good power for the weight classes. But and I didn't have that much of a problem with it, but I've got to say he's been taking more shots. Took a lot of shots in that Seha fight, which ended up being a draw when Seha came in overweight and probably got a little advantage. And we know Mr. Neri has been known as boxing's arguably number one culprit for doing that. So that's still very well in play as we go into this Saturday. And, you know, Showtime's going to want that fight to go on. So you could be dealing at a situation like that again. And what I'm getting to is, you know, I've been higher on Brandon Figueroa than I think a lot of people have been. And I haven't gotten down on him or anything, but just in that manner he's fighting, I'm with you. My gut is just telling me, you know, my heart wants to pick Figueroa, but my head and my gut's just telling me that Neri's a power puncher for the weight, and that Brandon, he may very well come in overweight. And for Brandon Figueroa to get in close and just take shots from this guy, I think that's just going to be a little too much. I just think that Neri brings too much power for Figueroa to be in close and to take those kind of shots. And he's not going to start fighting tall just in this.
Yeah, he's not
going to
outbox.
Career. Right. He's not going to do it tonight. You know, he's not going to do it Saturday night in the biggest fight of his career when he hasn't been doing it so far. I mean, that's one of those things. You get a new trainer or something like that. It doesn't always work, but maybe they get you to do it a little bit. But I don't anticipate seeing that Saturday night. So reluctantly, I'm also going to have to go with Neri. And I just say reluctantly, but it's because I've enjoyed watching Brandon Figueroa come up. I think he's better than people think, even though I'm going against him Saturday night. And like you said, he's a solid underdog, but not a huge underdog. So, you know, the odds makers have some respect for what he brings to the table. But I just can't see him going through 12, taking those shots from Neri that sooner or later he's going to get broken down or something like that before it's over. I would say, you know, the way he fights, his best chance is going to have to be like we've just been talking about Fundora recently. He doesn't get that kind of leverage, but, you know, just where he's leaning on Neri and getting leverage and maybe he's able to use his size and he starts wearing on Neri a little bit and taking away his power. But I don't think he's going to – it's a close call for me like that, but I don't think he's going to quite be able to pull that off. And I think Neri's going to end up winning this one.
Yeah, I mean, he's got it's crazy. He's only 24 years old. He's got 72-inch reach. I knew it was long, but I just checked. It's like, wow, that's – yeah, but like you say, he's not going to do it. But, yeah, since 2018, they've slowly stepped him up. The Seha could have been, like, the first time against more of an experienced guy that was a former champ or whatever. And maybe that was the issue in there and why that was a draw and whatnot. He did look a little bit better against Damian Vasquez. But, yeah, I like Neri here just to overwhelm him. And I think that we are going to see a little bit more. If the scales, you know, tip in, I think we're going to tip towards the old Neri style, like I said, with a little bit more responsibility, maybe in the first handful of rounds. But I think there's just no way that the Figueroa just doesn't – he's not going to outbox him. But I think if he starts to try to do that, he's going to leave himself defensively open. You know what I mean? Because he's just not used to it. Like you said, he's just not going to randomly do it. But he's only 24, so it's not like he can't bounce back from that. And so I think it's a nice – I think it's a really good test for him. And I do – you know, some of the odds are kind of far, actually. Let's see here. It's plus 320 is the top I'm seeing right now, plus 336, actually. And then most of it's in that plus 275 range. Is that even, you know, you think of plus 320, even thinking about maybe taking a flyer on that, or is it you needed plus 400, plus 500 to feel like I would at least, it'd be worth it to risk a little?
No, I think I agree with you. I think actually plus 320 is worth a flyer because I was seeing things like plus 200, and that was seeming about right to me where I would pick Neri. So Yeah, I'm gonna agree with you there. I think your point's well taken. You know, if you're looking at, let's say, +300 or above, I think Figueroa would be a pretty good choice. You know, I agree with you. He's still a young guy. I think he's going to take some shots in this one, but he's young enough, and I do think he has enough ability. I don't think he's going to be done after this one either. But, yeah, I would say, like, let's say you're looking at a +320. I mean, what you want to look at here is if there's just such a gap in levels or you just can't really see a path for one guy winning the fight, then you don't want to jump on it anyway. But, you know, what would a path for Figueroa, the way he's been fighting, could I see it? Yeah, I mean, just him leaning on Nery, and you know, maybe he's got Nery backing up some. You know, if he backs him, you know, I figure this will be his strategy too. You know, if he's able to back Nery up long enough and it starts early in the fight and, you know, he can withstand the power at least long enough, you know, Nery's power might start getting drained and Figueroa might keep raining shots on him and maybe he starts to wear Nery down. I think Nery's power will get to him first, but if you're thinking about going for a dog and you like the +320 and above, I can see a scenario like that for Figueroa. And sometimes that's how you got to look at these things. You just got to look at what are all the reasonable scenarios, not crazy scenarios, but reasonable scenarios. And yeah, I think there's a reasonable scenario that Figueroa backs him up and maybe gets him a bit tired later in the fight. But what I'm, My what I think's most likely is Figueroa is going to take too many power shots from Nery, and that's going to start getting to him.
Right, and had this been Nery's first fight at the weight class, where we're still kind of wondering what his power is at this weight class comparatively, but at least now he's had a couple to get settled into, or at least one. So. That'll play into it too. Does his power actually, what we've seen from him in his career after 30 whatever fights, 31 or whatever, you know, he had a lot of power, you know, and you're exactly. Still wondering if 120, you know, so yeah, I think you're right. I think you'll just catch him with the bigger shots and it'll just be, you know, maybe he'll TKO him, maybe not. I don't know. You know, we didn't touch upon this last week. We just mentioned it and didn't get to it about that new study, according to a new study, that the younger sports fans have a different vibe when it comes to boxing, a different thought process, just in general, not so much team-oriented as much as the other generations have been, and more looking for an individual player, which plays right into the hand for boxing, obviously. Before we get that, though, I didn't talk about Leon Smith and Kurbanov. I had Liam Smith with that pressure winning 7-5. Now, the judges, one judge had it 117-112, but, you know, 115-113. How did you see that fight with Kurbanov and Smith? Obviously, we know it was on the road, so that's good for a round or two, but I felt Liam did enough to irk that one out.
Yeah, well, here's what I would just say. With all my boxing, my opinions and you know, scoring of fights and things like that, I like to go with, you know, what I see live. There's just something about it to me that matters. Why I'm prefacing it with that is I was working.
I got you.
I did get to catch four rounds of the fight. And the last four rounds I saw, I thought Liam Smith was getting the better of that action. I was not impressed by Kurbanov. I thought actually Liam Smith was fighting pretty well, but the guy's underpowered, you know, as he has been throughout his career. So, you know, he fights with a decent aggressive style with some modicum of boxing skill, but the pop's just not there. And so, you know, he was landing some real good shots. But the thing is, Kurbanov, my first extensive look at him, and he doesn't have any pop. So, you know, Liam Smith was just brushing off whatever he landed and backing him up. The four rounds I saw, I thought Smith was getting the better of the action, but I didn't see the earlier rounds live, so I defer to you on that. But the way you ended up having scored, I mean, it looked to me, those right. I was feeling like rounds were close, but I just kept looking at it in what I did see and say, it seems to me that Liam Smith's getting a little bit better of the action in these rounds, even though it's tight. So that what you the way you scored it would seem to me, if those earlier rounds were like the later rounds, that Liam Smith deserved a slight edge.
Yeah, Gurbanov had this knockoff shoulder roll that once in a while did a little, you know, was effective, but for the most part wasn't. So this study, this is according to a new study, they broke down, you know, these people actually work for the Zone and ESPN Plus, and obviously a lot of this stuff has to do with online, but as we know, we're already moving online in a lot of ways, the you know, Generation X and the boomers anyway, but we know they've grown up with it, the millennials and, of course, now Generation Z. In this new study, you know, some of the ways they broke it down was pretty interesting, John. And when you look at the, you know, Gen X doesn't have a top five boxing, and boomers used to, but they don't have it in there anymore as well. Football and baseball still heavy, of course, football, but baseball is actually still second when it comes to, and this is online now too. Obviously, baseball ratings aren't the same as basketball, but when you look at, you know, Gen Z has boxing fourth, football, basketball, soccer, and boxing with fifth baseball, and even the millennials have it fifth. And something that they, you know, we've always heard that it's just old people, just 40 and above that pay attention to it. And of course, you know, attracting this younger crowd so you can in 5, 10, 15 years, get them to pay for some of these fights, get them to go to Vegas or wherever to pay a healthy ticket price. That's the tough part, right? That we're going to find out gate-wise with like Jake Paul and how many, you know, we've already seen some of those gates before. And, you know, how much Ryan Garcia can cross over to where the youngsters, when they get into their jobs, and some of them careers, of course, and they're making more money, are they going to put, you know, their money where their mouth is or their online presence is? But that one, I knew it wasn't as bad as some folks thought, but that one kind of shocked me. And you know, they talked about individual players rather than just team sports. Did you get a chance to look at any of that information and any kind of that article or that anything of that there, John?
I did, and the first thing that struck me about it was I just looked at it and I just said, I hope this is true, because it surprised me. I know there have been some TV numbers in recent years that did, at least out of the percentage of the people watching, just like you stated, that it was much more younger than we were led to believe. It was just assumed it was all older viewers. And while there's plenty of those, there was a much higher percentage of younger viewers than you would have expected. So I've seen that in recent years. But, yeah, I saw the study, and I just thought, I hope it's true. I got to say, I wasn't, like, feeling that myself. You know, when you try to see what – I try to interact with people of all ages. I try to mix it up, and, you know, I like to do that as a person, find out what's going on with all different generations, old and young. I'm always curious about that. So, you know, and anybody younger I know or observed, I wasn't sensing it. So that's why I said, I hope it's true, because if that is correct, though, that's great. That's great for boxing. I would speculate some things if it is true. One thing I do notice with younger people I know is that, and I've noticed this for a while, and the stats are backing this up, and older people have trouble gripping this, but this is a fact, and you'll see it even at college stadiums have had a problem with it. I know, Chris, you follow everything, so you might have already read that stuff, which is this. You know, those younger generations, and I don't even really fault them. Some people fault them, but I don't. They don't want to sit through a three-hour game. They don't want to sit through a three-and-a-half-hour
right.
game, and frankly, they don't do it. Like, that's something you'll see a lot of people – you know, in their 40s, 50s, and 60s, even maybe late 30s, you know, I sat through the Giant game or the Viking game Sunday. And, you know, football is the most popular sport, but that generation doesn't do that. They don't sit through the Viking game or the Giant game, whether it's at the stadium or sit on their couch. They're not sitting
yeah.
through 3.5
they
hours.
They hate commercials.
They're checking out,
you know?
They hate the commercials.
They're like, what's
they're
a commercial?
Highlights.
I hate
yeah.
commercials.
the next day they're looking at the highlights, and they do the same thing. Why, you know, college Division I teams have even done studies for that, because their own students, even at the big programs, the student section's empty by the third quarter. I mean, even if it's a tight game, I mean, it's not like the old days. I mean, they don't see that as a value. Like, you know, I'm gonna take 3.5 hours of my life and sit there and watch this game. You know, don't care how the team did, or maybe check the highlights. That's why, again, you know this stuff, Chris. The Red Zone channel is very popular. The Fantasy channel.
Yep.
You know, and why is that? Because people don't want to sit through, especially younger people, 3.5 hour games. And you know, I think really
show
older
me
people
the important
look at it,
stuff.
Right. Show me the important stuff. Like, you know, maybe they're not, you know, people like to knock the generation, younger generations on different things because it's not the way they did it. But, you know, maybe they're not wrong, even though we're huge sports fans. I mean, maybe it's not wrong to say, yeah, I like to follow sports, but I don't exactly want to take 3.5 hours of my life and sit on the couch here and watch this game, or, you know, sit out in the cold and watch this game for 3.5 hours.
Hey, the DVR
hours.
Is my friend. The DVR is my friend when it comes to sports, I'll tell you that.
Exactly. That's what I'm just saying here, that what I was getting to is, hey, maybe boxing, you know, if you're just watching the main event and, you know, it's 45 minutes and it's clear, we could all people can understand that and what's going to happen. You know, that's got some appeal. I mean, I think that's got some appeal. And it can, the fight could even end shorter. You know, a boxing match can even go shorter than that, of course, if there's a knockout. So, and, you know, same with MMA. So I think that, and, you know, I think there's another one thing I've wondered, and a lot of people might not look at it as pleasant, but I do think it's worth talking about as well, because, and it kind of ties in a little bit even to our discussion of Saturday night, even though it's brutal, but again, it's true, and you got to look at these issues. As the NFL, for marketing reasons, good marketing reasons, and the NHL had to do it, even though they've had some stuff recently years ago, and they really are doing it, let's face it, as they're taking the violent part of their games out of it because they are afraid, you know, of lower viewing participation rates when we find out about CTE and some of the gruesome injuries, things with painkillers, all kinds of issues like that. There's no doubt the violence is leaving. I mean, look, I'm not hearkening back and saying we want people hurt or anything, but let's face it, as great as he is, a 45-year-old Tom Brady is not even playing 10 years ago at age 45. I mean, now he just stands back there and, you know, he's not taking hits.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
there's a penalty if you put a finger on his helmet. Yeah.
Hey, there's a penalty if you touch his face mask, literally. I mean, not face mask in, but if you touch his face mask. So what I'm saying too is maybe I was wondering if there might be a little element of this, that if humans still want to see some of the stuff, which obviously they do, and there could even be sociological arguments that society needs it because this is a organized way and a controlled way to get the violent tendencies out. I mean, you know, even some academics will say that that's a legitimate debate, you know, that like boxing, MMA is an organized, controlled way that, say, humans get their old impulses out where they used to have more wars and things like that. So why I'm saying that on this discussion is that as I watch and I see, you know, just no violence in the NHL compared to what you saw in, say, the 1970s and you know, even some of the 1980s. Now, the NFL, as we all know, I mean, you know, just watch a game from the 70s or the 60s, remind yourself what could be done compared to now, and not passing judgment on saying it's wrong to take that out of it
or either way.
But it's factual, right? It has happened that, you know, I thought there might be an opening for something like boxing because it's still around, that, you know, maybe the young fan that's just seen one too many targeting penalties in an NFL game.
Right.
Just
says,
you know, in boxing, it's not targeting. The guy gets knocked
out.
That
is the target. Yeah.
That is the target. That's the target. Right. And that guy wins. You know, maybe I'm just going to watch. Maybe I'm just going to watch that, and I'm not going to sit there for 3.5 hours and get frustrated by the targeting flag, you know, every time there's a hit.
But
with boxing and MMA still being around, because, you know, I always felt like I don't know if you've noticed this, Chris. I mean, you follow all sports too. I mean, I felt a little bit, even though it's a different sport, like, didn't you get a feel a little bit like the MMA? And, you know, I follow MMA too, not like boxing, but that like the MMA fan of like the last 15 years was some guy that was watching the NHL in like 1975. Like,
right.
Like
yeah.
That type of a fan, you know what I mean? Like, to me, it almost seemed mm-hmm. like there was some of that overlap, that was like that kind of demographic. And so I wondered, you know, if maybe as NFL, you know, legislates all this stuff out, that you're going to have some people to say, you know, I think I just like how boxing does that a little bit better.
Yeah, and it's funny because as we mentioned that, you know, that Generation Z says that they're more into, you know, a player, an individual, and that's where even soccer that got bigger here, but obviously there's a lot of sports packages now available that weren't 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago to watch the top, you know, football, soccer from overseas and whatnot. So they're into that. They're into individuals. Shit, the NBA lines up nicely for them because there's so much player movement where I'm just cheering for that team now because he's there. When Kevin Garnett left the Boston, I'll be honest, I was on the Lakers side in the 80s with the Boston Lakers stuff. I loved me some Larry Bird. Kevin McHale's from Hibbing, you know, Minnesota. So I love that team, but I was cheering for Magic in that squad. But, you know, it is kind of funny how, like, when you think about it, like, once he went to Boston, I wanted KG and Boston to win that championship. And you heard him. The reason why is because the first thing he said was, "What's up, Soda? This is for you, too." So it was, he knew that our Timberwolves suck and we need a championship. And so I was living through him in a sense, and I really felt that championship. I have a T-shirt. I wasn't going to go out and buy a jersey. But I do have a T-shirt, a Celtics T-shirt with a KG on it, you know, so that plays into it. But another thing is what you said, that one night, this is one night, 45 minutes. You know, I don't have to go through a season. I don't have to go through a playoff series. I don't have to go through the whole playoff thing. It's one night. I'm into this person. I'm doing it. So the individual stuff, that type of stuff, and also – just the highlight reel stuff that follows you, like we saw Wilder these last couple of years build and build and build through his gates and his ratings. And you just saw people going, "I didn't see the fight live, dude, but I'm going to see his next fight live for sure." You know, so that does kind of line up with that one night and boxing in 45 minutes. If you can think of the wildest fight, whatever, it's 45 minutes or 20 or whatever, you know, Hearns, Hagler, all that. And when you look at a triple overtime game, that was phenomenal. 17 innings, but the shit took a long time. So nothing beats a great – if you look at a great game, a great this, a great that, nothing beats a great fight. And sometimes it has to do with so much stuff takes place in a half hour. You know, you can maybe take a pee real quick or go to the fridge, but you only got a minute, you know. Sometimes I have to talk to my nephews and be like, "Hey, you can look at your phone in that minute. You got a full minute to look at your phone during the round," because they'll be like, "Oh, I missed it." And they're like, "Well, dude, stop looking at your phone. You know, stop looking at someone yep. in the crowd. You got 3 minutes. You got a full minute." You know, I always say that's 11 minutes that you could sit and watch your phone out of 40-something. So, and they're like, "Oh, that's a good call." And so now they kind of got that down. But, yeah, it's interesting. And like I said, I hope that plays into it, because a lot of people could say, "Well, this is online stuff." Well, yeah, but that's where they're at, so that makes sense. Any other items that you want to talk about, John, at all, before we let you go?
I think we got most of them covered this week. That's topical, Chris. Let me just add, though, to what you said. I think you made a lot of excellent points, and I would add on top of that, I've always felt good about boxing on this. Right. Look at how the NFL, even when we know this isn't the case, they would market a game as, and frankly, it's kind of always has annoyed me. Like, it's Brady against Manning. Well, you know,
yep.
it's 11 guys on the field on each side at one time. And football,
right,
I would say,
right.
is the ultimate team game. But it's Brady against Manning. They're not even on the field at the same time. Or like you said,
yeah.
it's not as bad, but it's almost as bad. It's Magic against Bird. You know, well, you know, they might not even be each other's cover the whole game, you know, but it's magic. Yep. It's magic against Bird. They try to take team games and market it as this individual matchup, and people buy into that. So it shows how much they want to buy into that. And boxing is that. One person against one person. There's no excuses. Nobody else to blame. You know, nobody else involved. It's just, you know, the ultimate one-on-one. And I think that's always had an appeal for me. And I think most people, if you get into the sport, I mean, you know, forget blaming teammates or anybody else or coaches. It's just you in there. And I think that's why boxers a lot of times make excuses after a fight, because there are no teammates or anything. It's just them. So sometimes the excuses sound crazy to people, or sour grapes, but
it's embarrassing. You know, that's a lot of people that saw that happen. You know, I remember getting pinned or getting technical loss in wrestling in front of a gym full of people, let alone it wasn't even broadcast anywhere. You know what I mean? So the embarrassment plays into that too.
Right. You have to then rationalize so you can be up for your next match or your next fight and still believe in yourself. It's kind of a thing that's annoying from the outside, but it goes with the territory. So, yeah, a lot of reasons that these might be some areas where there's some hopeful reasons for boxing.
All right, John, we will speak to you next week. You have yourself a good night.
All right, Chris, great talking with you as always. Have a good night.
Yes, sir. All right. So, and just to kind of go over my scorecard on that Liam Smith Kurbanov. Yeah, it's an N, not an M. I had, let me see this scorecard here. I had it 2-2 after 4. I had it 3-3 after 6. You know, it was out of Kurbanov, it was mostly jabs. You know, he did start to land some decent counters and stuff. And the defense got better. I said the knockoff shoulder roll, which it was. But he did actually start to do some of that more. He landed the flush right hands as well. Gave him the 6 for that. So it was 3-3. And I kind of felt like Smith took control down the stretch. I gave him the 7th, the 9th. The 10th is pressure behind that jab. But, you know, even in that 10th round, it seemed like he buzzed Smith late. There was a lot of give and take in some of these rounds. So it was close. It wasn't like I think Liam Smith got robbed, like it's 9-3 or 10-2 or whatever. But it was a competitive fight. I just thought not just busier, but the better shots, those left hooks, the jab right hand, and like I said, the constant pressure. But really good, like in that 12th round, a lot of good action down the stretch, no doubt. It was a competitive, fun fight. I just thought Liam Smith may have done enough to get it done. All right, let's bring in Mark 310. I'll break down a little bit more of that Derry Figueroa fight and some other news items along with the fight news and boxing Twitter segment that we closed the show with. But let's go out here to 310 Mark and see what's going on. What's up, buddy? How you doing, man?
Hey, what's going on, Chris? Yeah, just wanted to give a quick little, you know, short little call in.
Yeah, we'll
my,
catch
little,
up.
My thoughts on what happened last weekend, because that was fucking awesome. I don't know. Was it just a normal Canelo fight for you, or did you, like, sort of see, like, dude, this fucking guy's style is fucking dope as hell, sort of? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think he really cut the ring off that much, but then again, Saunders wasn't moving as much until later in the fight.
I thought
he was just effectively going to the body and landing. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it was weird because he was blocking. Couple things. I don't think it was fake at all, but a couple people that I know, my brother, a couple other people, like, they were going to throw money down on Saunders, and I told them, I was like, I don't know, because the day of, the odds never changed. It was really, really weird. It only went down by, like, 25, 50 points the day of, And so I looked at that as kind of shady. I was like, eh, you might be taking a dive. I wouldn't put your money down on that, because by now you would assume that it would tighten up a little bit with how everyone's talking. And anyway, I just want to preface it with that, because the second round, it was first or second round when he was blocking punches. Like, and I saw the first punch land on his gloves. I was like, ah, he's done. Like, I was like, oh, wow. Like, you know, Canelo's really, really powerful. And I was like, why is he blocking instead of, like, dodging? Weird. But don't get me wrong.
Right.
He never fought like that. He never. But then again, we can attribute
super
that
wide
to
stance, too. Super wide stance out of nowhere.
It's weird. It's really, really weird. Like, the odds never change. They only change a little tiny, tiny bit. The reason why I thought that was shady is because I told them, I was like, dude, that plus 500, it's staying there because they're getting more suckers to buy into it. If it was usually when it's a real fight, like I remember a couple Crawford fights, a couple Spence fights, like, you know, like it just always tightens up a hell of a lot more than that right before. Doesn't it? I mean, not by, it doesn't stay at plus five. I mean, they stay,
it doesn't stay
literally never, never. It usually drops by a good, you know, I don't know, maybe 40%, like, you know, even if he's a heavy, heavy favorite. So I looked at that as kind of shady. But don't get me wrong, when you could hear the punches, and when he got hit on his gloves, his whole body, like, jolted. I was like, ah, what the fuck? What am I doing? Like, I'm breaking my own code. Like, what have I said for years? I've always said, UK fighters, it doesn't fucking count. It doesn't count. Like, you know, like, he fucking gets hit. He's blocking, and he can't even take the fucking the punch. It's like, are you kidding? Like, it's like, I don't know, man. Canelo looked really, really powerful, but these UK fighters, it's like, I will never, never, ever, ever believe in one ever again. Like, ever. I don't give a shit. Like, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if fucking Ramirez fucking hits Josh Taylor with a body shot and he fucking, like just falls down on the ground. Like, yeah, like fucking just, you know. It's just because did you notice that? Like, why are you blocking the punches if they're clearly hurting you? Like, when I saw him get hit by the first fucking, when he blocked the first punch, I was like, oh, he's going to get knocked out. What the fuck? Like, are you serious? And why are you voluntarily? But we can't take credit away from Canelo. What if that's because Canelo was just fast?
Yeah, he's definitely quick for the weight class. And I liked how he said, you know what? I'm not going to do all – I'm going right to the body. I'm going left hook, straight right hand
right
to
away,
the body,
yeah.
And just digging, digging, digging. And he wasn't worried about punch count. He wasn't worried about much.
How many of them did
and then he started
he landed like fucking eight punches. I think he was winning the round. I mean, I think that – I don't know, Billy Joe maybe won, what, 3-4 rounds, if that? But I could see the other side, too.
Tops.
Yeah,
I had it
5-3
or 6-2.
Yeah, for sure, me too. I could see two rounds only going to Billy Joe just because the effect that the punches were having on him, but I don't see how anyone could give him the first round. I mean, not give him the first round. Canelo didn't fucking do anything. He threw, like, 2-3 punches that barely, but it's whatever. It's funny how people are fucking talking about the fucking scoring when it's like, dude, you got knocked the fuck out. Are people talking about the fucking scoring like this with fucking Amir Khan? Like, Canelo could have been doing anything. He could have been setting him up like you're setting up Amir Khan. All right, let me let him fucking get some confidence. Let me get some energy because I'm going to knock this motherfucker the fuck out. Like, how do we know he wasn't doing that? Like, so I don't want to take credit away from Canelo because I watched this fight like 6 times. I was like, dude, just the way that Canelo was moving, just because it's exciting. He's getting motherfuckers the fuck. He's trying to get him out of there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like he's trying to get him out of there. And he's combining, you know, a little bit of his old style with whatever. But it's funny.
Countering.
Countering while he's coming forward. It looks like I could see how people are saying, like, oh, shit, he's fucking unstoppable. But, hey, we got to take this into consideration, guys, okay? Okay, Billy Joe Saunders is from the UK, all right? Therefore, he doesn't count. Anyone from the UK, they just don't count in general. So, I mean, like, it doesn't matter what the fuck they do. I mean, like, you know, people talking about how he quit. It doesn't matter if he quit or not. He's from the UK. So, like, it doesn't matter what the fuck they do because fucking he's not – they're not real fighters. They're, like, fucking make – they're, like – it's like the B-string or, like, whatever. Fucking, like, you know, it's, like, second-tier dudes. Like, you know what I mean? Like, even – yeah, he's real, real slick, but I don't know.
His footwork was trash in the fight, though. Footwear was trash. There's only a couple times where he turned them. He didn't get stuck on the rope front, but he did get the 20. But he did get the 22x22. It's like, well, use that motherfucker then.
Have you ever seen him blocking punches? I've never seen him block punches like that. Like, just put his.
You're right, though. That's a good point. He usually does juke.
He usually is
upper body. Yeah, in your jab.
Yeah, that's
like,
the reason why he'll jab. He just, like, the first round, he was not assertive at all. He was just, like, whatever, seeing what was going to happen, felt Canelo's power. When he got hurt in the second, third round with that uppercut, then he was like, all right, let me show people what I could do for a couple of rounds, and that's all he did. But then he gets knocked the fuck out, and even how he got knocked out is, like, such an amateur move. He was on some fucking Erickson Lubin shit. He, like, throws a right hand, and then he ducks down to his left. Like, Canelo's throwing the right uppercut all fucking night. You didn't notice that? Like, are you, like, moving just to show off, or are you moving to evade punches? I don't get it. Like, because why are you moving into punches, dude? Like, you know, he's had problems with that before, but later
on in
the fight.
Down. He did that a bunch. Ducked right into the punch. It's like, dude,
just trying to show off. Just trying to be like, yo, look what I can do. Oh, shit. Oh, man, I made a miss. It's like, I don't know, man. You should, you know, if you're going to move like that, like, actually do it with some purpose. So when people talk about Caleb Plant, it's not the same. Number one, because he's not from the fucking UK, okay? So, like, I don't give a shit.
To go along with this joke you're talking about, read the text really quick. go ahead. Sorry.
It's them orbital bones are built different. I think he really broke it, though, dude. It was instantly.
Oh, no, he did. It's just funny because, you know, it just kind of goes with the theme.
I understood it. Oh, hell yeah. Because just like James Toney said back in the day, and I used to think it was bullshit. I was like, how could James Toney say that? Because he's talking shit about some other fighters, and they were ducking him at heavyweight at the time. He was like, you know, we're fighting in the UK where it don't count. And I was like, and then I just started to see it over the years. We see shit like this. You see a guy come over here 30-0, and he just, like, you know, shit like that. You see this shit over and over and over again. These guys quit. Again, people, don't make a fucking big deal out of it. He's from the UK. It doesn't count anyway. So his existence in the fucking sport doesn't count. So, like, who fucking cares what the fuck he does? He's going to quit. He's going to fucking run.
Cool.
He's going to cry. What?
I wouldn't go that far as he doesn't exist, dude. That's cold-blooded.
In the sport, they don't exist. It doesn't count.
But they haven't a couple years ago we heard about the takeover. That shit ain't happening.
Take over how? Because they got cool crowds? Yeah, I'd love to fucking party with them. That's cool. But fucking, like, their fighters are soft. They're just soft as hell. Like, that's just how to describe them. They're just soft fucking fighters. They're just, like, you know, I mean, it's...
What about Tyson Fury?
He probably is softy, but he's just fucking, like, 7'8", and so we can't see it. You know, like, so, I mean, he's just too big for us to realize it. And I don't know. I mean, it's who knows. I'm just being an asshole. But at the same time, it's like, and I actually agree. I actually agree with Billy Joe quitting. Like, you know, like, I was like,
why did you
continue?
For sure.
You're gonna get knocked the fuck out. What the fuck is the difference? Why are people giving him shit about that? Who the fuck cares? He's from the UK.
He talked a bunch of shit about people. Daniel Dubois took a knee, his eye was messed up, and he said, get dragged out of the ring and all that. You got to get dragged out of the ring. It's like, well, dog, you didn't get dragged out of the ring. But I agree. I'm not going to give him too much shit for that because that's a serious injury. You with me? Kind of cutting in and out.
Yeah, hello?
There we go.
Was I just calling you?
Yeah, I don't know.
Or are you calling me? Yeah, I don't know.
I think you called
it's
me.
Fucking
yeah,
weird.
Yeah.
I mean, there is something that we got to – this is probably just my chin. It's like – there's something that needs to be said about Canelo's discipline and his, like – the way that he was coming forward. Yeah, I know it's not perfect and all that stuff, but just how he, like, you know, is trying to make the fans happy and shit like that. You know, he's just going after guys with the fucking belts. He's giving this fucking entertainment. Who the fuck else is doing this shit? You know, you got Spence, you got Crawford, both fucking bitches. Like, you know, like, they don't want to fucking give, they don't give a shit about the fans. He is actively going out there and doing that. He has legitimate reasons for ducking certain people, you know. As far as Benavidez goes, you know, he doesn't have the fucking belt. Has this changed your perception at all with Caleb Plant? Because I think people are going to be pretty surprised at that, because if you noticed, and I forgot to mention this last week, but it was kind of just like in passing, that the fact that Billy Joe throws 3 and 4 punches at a time, that's not good to deal with somebody like Canelo, who's literally just trying to counter with power every fucking 2 seconds. You know, like he's winding up and trying to knock you the fuck out with one counter punch. And so he's going to catch you, like, you know, in the midst of those shots. Guess what? Caleb Plant does not do that. Caleb Plant is like Floyd Mayweather, Money Mayweather, one punch, you know, like literally just pot shot and grabbing, smart fighter, one punch at a time, smart. Like he's not that type of dude just trying to
show
off.
Sharp jab, too. Sharp jab.
Exactly.
You're going to feel it, and it's going to bother you.
And he would never move into a punch, even though he doesn't have the legs like fucking like Billy Joe, maybe because he's only moving when it's necessary, you know, like maybe. But what were your thoughts on that, though? Like did your perception change?
No, because I do kind of what you're saying. I think Plant will he'll go full strategy. He won't care if people are booing because he's circling or moving. He's going to try to land the jab first and foremost. And at 168, he'll grab. I think, he'll grab. I think he's just quicker. I think he's more suited at 168. He's a confident dude. I think he's faster. We're going to see how good his defense in this fight, no doubt about it, but – and there is something to be said about the last 5 rounds or whatever. You saw that in the Uzgadati, you know, fight.
Yeah.
There is something to be said about that. But I like what you said about the pot shots. Like, if he's going to land a power shot, it's a pot shot, and he's dipping. And he's pivoting, and he's out, you know? Exactly.
Like Canelo's not like, – that type of shit, he's, like, winding up trying to get you the fuck out of there. It's not Kovalev. Mm-hmm. It's not like this isn't Kovalev who is this guy was a guy who didn't get knocked out. You know, so it's like, and he, I mean, he can't view all these 168 pounders like they're like that. They view Caleb Plant as if he's like a less seasoned version of Billy Joe, but that was never the case. I always knew that he's better. He's actually naturally bigger. And remember, I was talking about Billy Joe's fucking height last week. My fucking dumbass, I looked at BoxRec and I thought he was 5'11". He was the same height as fucking Canelo.
Yeah, there wasn't a big discrepancy. That's for damn sure.
BoxRec,
that is a good point. I kind of forgot about that.
Yeah, BoxRec says 5'11". I'm thinking this guy's fucking taller. I'm like, oh man, he's taller. He's the same fucking size as Canelo. He's a 160 pounder. You know, we'll see what Plant is, but Plant never even fought a fight at 160, right? He's been at 168 since the start.
Yeah, yep.
His inside game is dope. There's so many times that Billy Joe should have held. You know, when you land, you hold on a guy like that. You know, why are you throwing multiple combinations? Why are you moving right after you're punching when you know exactly what he's doing? He's just trying to, that one punch shit, I mean, it's like, I think Caleb Plant is a little bit too smart, a little bit too precise for that, but it'll be fun because he might get caught, you know, like he probably will get caught. Not with something like this, I don't think, like, but, you know, like, I don't think, I see him holding a lot. He's smart. You know, when a guy gets close to him, he knows what to do. He doesn't give a shit, like, you know, about what the ref says. He'll walk. Like, you know, I noticed him doing the same shit that Floyd does. For some reason, no other boxer does it. What Floyd will do is, like, when the ref is on the – he'll put his shoulder over the other guy, like the opposite shoulder of the where the ref is. And then he'll walk in the opposite direction, like, than the ref. So the ref has to, like, walk around and try to, like, hey, break it up. And, like, he gets, like, an extra 5-6 seconds of, like, rest. He does a lot. He's like, Caleb Plant is the only one that picked up on that, and you see him doing that all the time. And he actually uses his holding, like, effectively. And just he's just on point with a lot of things that he does. I thought that Billy Joe was going to give Canelo some problems because of his athleticism, but I don't know why he was fighting the way he was fighting. I didn't even want to bring that up. It's awesome how you brought that up. Like, you know, because I was sitting there, I was like, what the fuck is he fighting like this? Like, is this another long dive? But, like,
he wanted to control the center of the ring right away. And it's like, okay, I mean, I guess I understand some of that, but it didn't seem like he was trying to establish much.
Are you the only one that did you hear anyone else say that? Because I figured no one would pick up, like, or did you just notice that? Like, he's blocking, like, fighting different.
I wrote it in my notes, but I did, like, on my scorecard, but I did see a couple people on Twitter say, hey, you know, he's not really moving. He's not, like I said, I mean, you got that extra 2 feet. Use that shit. Like, it seemed like.
He was inactive or something for, like, 2 years.
That's it. And it seemed like he, even when he was moving later, his feet weren't fast. He wasn't moving right. And maybe that is that activity and blowing up and weight and all that.
But he would move, but then block. He would, like, he would move,
right,
but then allow the punches to hit his gloves. I've never, not one fight, ever seen him do that unless it was, like, the 12th round, 10th round, when, like, you know, he's in those situations. Never, ever saw him do that. I don't know. But, again, the power of Canelo is undeniable. It's crazy. It's one of those things where, like, I mean, my viewpoints haven't changed on him at all in terms of, like, him not having any, like, real fights above 160, of course. But at the end of the day, when you're a fighter or anybody just trying to achieve something in general, that type of shit's not going to really matter if you think that it's real. You know, the power of belief is fucking, you know, it's like unmatched.
You're tight. That's perfectly said, dude. That is so perfect. That's so true. As long as you think it, it's a wrap, dude, and you don't have much time to think it. It's happening right now to you, you know?
Yeah, man, you knocked out Kovalev and all this shit. Ever since I got into this nootropics company and I bought, you know, one of our main competitors out not too long ago, and so a lot of the new nootropics that come out in other countries, I look at the studies on them. But I noticed, like, over history, not, you know, this is, like, since the beginning of time, the most powerful thing is so interesting is placebo. Like, placebo across the board, like, you know, they give the people a sugar pill, and, like, you know, they give the other people the actual medication, 35 to 40% across the board. No less than 35% effectiveness is placebo. So when you think about that, and I've done research on it myself, there's actually, like, back in the day, well, not back in the day, I think as early as 10 years ago, there's surgical placebos where they would make an incision on somebody, not actually do the operation, and then on one person, on the other person, do the actual operation, and it's the same percentage across the board. I'm not talking about one or two studies. This is, like, fucking hundreds of stuff. Like, you know, and so when you think about the implications of that, it's not just bullshit with your mind. It's like, you know, your pancreas. Like, there's a lot of, like, stuff on the pancreas and stuff like that. How does your body – so a person heals their own pancreas. How does your body even know? How does your mind even know how to do that if you don't even know where – your mind doesn't even know where the pancreas is. Like, you know, like, it doesn't even know how to fix that. So
right.
that's why, like, the power of belief is, it's no bullshit. It's not some fairy tale shit. Canelo, it doesn't matter if those fights are real or not. He really believes in himself, and, you know, that's all that really matters. But it should be important for other fighters too. Like, you could do the same thing. You could do the same thing. It's proven. I mean, it's interesting.
I like the different styles he's using too. In this one, he didn't seem like he really gave two shits about Saunders' power. And he's like, I'm not respecting it. I'm trying to break you down.
It's on some like Mike Tyson shit too. The way he's moving his head, like he's coming in, and it's countering with power the whole time. One thing I noticed you guys talking about, you and John, like, and I know me and you were talking about this, about the ratings not too long ago. I don't know, man. These guys have been in front of a lot of big audiences. Charlo, Caleb Plant. I haven't talked to anybody that knows Caleb Plant, by the way. You know,
sure.
I mentioned him. Nobody knows who the fuck he is. So all these views might be what I was talking about a couple of years ago. These guys are getting so many views, that you would assume that they're fucking pay-per-view stars. None of them became pay-per-view stars. The only guy that got on pay-per-view is Deontay, and HBO did that for him. So this regular TV bullshit, I don't know, man. It's not.
Well,
those
HBO
numbers,
didn't do that for Wilder, though. HBO didn't do that for Wilder. He never was on HBO.
He was already big. He was big on it. Yeah,
no,
remember
no.
when he was, I thought, Golden
no,
Boy.
Nope. No, his first championship big fight was Showtime. It wasn't on that. But,
oh,
but
yeah.
You're right, though.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But either way, it's just Showtime.
But sometimes, though, we could talk about ratings, but only a few of them have stuck. I mean, Spence has stuck. But you're right. It doesn't guarantee everybody's going to stick. And then, oh, this is how we do it. You know what I mean? It matters who you fight. It matters the name. Obviously, this might click and someone says, like, oh, I saw the commercial, but I didn't see the fight. So you're right. It doesn't always stick. It doesn't always make it. But, you know, Wilder and Spence, you know, because he was on Fox and NBC 3 or 4 different times. Wilder was too. So yeah, it's not all going to stick though. Oh no, it's a small percentage, and it's an
you
uphill battle.
It,
you got to
just
do
be
this
more
for a decade or 15 or 20. I disagree because you got to stick to this thing for a decade, 2 decades, and then it may
gotta,
be like, oh, dude,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to watch the next fight.
They
got
to beat. They got to really build up their resumes too, though. Like, I think that really
100%.
Matters at the end of the day. And I think that gets overlooked. Like, they're so concerned with getting in front of, like, faces.
Sure.
And
sure.
That they're not – they're, like, overlooking, like, you know, before they know it, it's fucking 5, 6 years later, and, yo, you didn't fight anybody, dude. Like, so, like, that's what I'm saying.
No, that's,
these UFC
that's
fans
true.
And shit, you don't have to put fighters in front of their – you don't have to – casual fans are casual fans. They have a brain. They have a phone. They know what to do. You don't have to market it to them. This isn't the 90s. You don't have to do that anymore.
Sure.
When they see something that's good, like word spreads, like when a guy's making noise, when a guy is
word
going
of mouth
through
is
shit.
Always strong.
Yeah, like this guy,
and if you're talking
the best guy
into
in the next
something.
Division.
Right, and if you're talking to someone into something, you're going, dude, he fought this guy. Oh, I know that guy. You know, you're right. That the resume does help,
like,
too. Just like when we talk about Ryan Garcia, all these Instagram followers, that's great. But is that going to collide into one here? Because that's the toughest part. You still need a resume. That is for sure.
Yeah, 100%. Because people, I mean, like, they want to witness greatness, really, at the end of the day. And so, like, that's really what it's all about. Like Canelo's numbers are going to go up after this. You know, more people are going to talk about him and stuff. But they're never going to be that high because everyone's going to always think of Floyd and, you know, like, how he beat him.
Yeah,
it's never going to be the equal as Floyd. Like, you know, but it's it really does. I think that they underestimate the intelligence of the fans. You can't force it on people. The more you force it on them – it's like the more you try to sell somebody, the more they try to fucking run away from you. You know, I mean, everyone wants what they can't have. So it's like, if these guys are fighting, like, if you fucking become, you just do it, and you don't fucking think about the money, and you just start fucking dominating dudes and getting dudes the fuck out of there and impressing people, word spreads. Like, it does. Like, it's
no,
everyone
right.
hated Floyd.
Definitely.
Everyone hated Floyd. They just knew that there was something great going on. They just knew. Like, so I just don't think it should be that. We'll see what happens with
in the dance
with
part.
The numbers.
You know, Manny Pacquiao and Floyd got big off of fighting Oscar. There's just no way around it. So
yeah.
That's another thing hampering too, which goes on the resume. But even if you have a solid resume, it still doesn't mean you're going to be popular, you know?
That's why everyone's an idiot for bad-mouthing Oscar. And it was like, I was excited about him coming back. I was disappointed when he's not coming back because I'm like, he's a savior. Have him fucking fight Golovkin. I don't know. Maybe have Golovkin take a dive, or maybe he'll actually beat him. I don't know. And then fuck, have him fight Spence. Boom, he fights Spence. Done deal. It's it. That's it. Like, Spence
no,
from here
true.
On out is huge. Whoever
it sounds silly to the hardcore, but they're a hardcore. They're not a casual. You're right.
He's the gateway.
People want to see names who they know. That's just the bottom freaking line, you know? It's true.
Yeah. I mean, it's he was going to be able to bring people back, but I mean, it's just I don't know. It was a fun weekend though. It was good. Hopefully there isn't going to be are we going to be good on this, on Caleb Plant actually doing the fight, or is this going to be some bullshit where they fucking are all like going, like, you know, they want to fucking be on a certain
right.
network and
it, from the sounds
you don't know anything
of it,
about that?
Well, from the sounds of it, well, from both
he's a
sides,
hard
of course,
side.
Especially
why not?
From the Plant side, that, yeah, exactly. That's what it is. Like, if the offer's better, then that's where we're going to go. And that's the thing that hasn't happened just yet on the PBC to go there as a top level fight too, not just an opponent or a second level fight. So I think if DAZN put so much money into Canelo, they're talking about a $40 million offer, 30-10. You know what I mean? I think Billy Joe just made 8 or 10.
You know that fight
Kovalev
was 20
made
bucks,
like
right?
that. Jacobs made
that
like
that. Fight was
10
only 20 bucks.
So
did you know that?
Yeah.
The
yep,
fight was
or,
only 20
yeah.
bucks.
Yep.
But they added
yep.
those. They must have picked up some sponsors or something and made up for it. But that was a good idea on their part.
It's 20
you knew
bucks.
That before?
You can buy it for 70. You can buy it for 70, but you get 2 months. Or I'm sorry, you get – well, it's kind of different every time. But last time you could buy Canelo's fight for 50 bucks, but you got 2 months of DAZN with it. So that was basically like
I don't think
the undercard in a sense. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I,
done
I guess
they
it
did
didn't
it for,
work. They did it
yeah,
for this
they
one?
Did it for Callum Smith.
I was looking
they
for.
Did it for.
Oh shit.
They did it for Callum. They didn't do it for Jacobs. No, they didn't do it for Jacobs. They just
no for this
price
one right here
dollars.
For Caleb for Billy Joe.
Billy
I didn't
Joe
see an
Saunders.
Option for it.
I don't.
Yeah,
yeah
it was
I don't
only 20
think
bucks.
They did it this, but before they tried to do that just to see if they could get someone to just well I pay for.
Must have been
you,
shitty.
So
the numbers
it,
must
have
been shitty.
Right. Right.
Numbers must have been really bad because they didn't have those advertisements last time too, right? They had
right,
commercials during the round, so they must have picked up other forms of revenue. Fucking Eddie
They've
Hearn,
been doing
man.
That for
he's
a while.
A,
They've been doing the commercials for a while on DAZN, by the way. That's
really?
Nothing new.
I don't during the that was during the fucking the last Canelo fight too.
Here it is. I got the thing. I'm on AT&T U-Versus, $70 for the fight. You could buy it for $70. Billy Joe Saunders, Canelo Alvarez. Let's see what
then,
it tells you that you get 2 to 3 months or something. I don't know what it is actually, but you can. They still did it this time. They still did it this time. It's just one of those things that it's like, hey, why not? You know, this one
I
says
wasn't
on
gonna
CBS.
Do it. Honestly, I wasn't gonna do it. If it was gonna be $70, I was gonna be like, fuck that, because it's like, you know, just out of just, you know, principle, like, man, you guys shouldn't be doing that shit, man. I'll just stream it. You know, like, but when I saw it was $20.
But you still
like,
had it available for 20 though. You still had it available for 20.
Yeah.
They're just saying
yeah.
a lot of people are used to doing the pay-per-view, so they're trying to take advantage of it. Just like the $100 for the whole year. You know, people are used to paying for stuff, so they said let's do it this way. But, yeah, if people were savvy, they did 20 who don't have DAZN, but you could. They actually made it available on pay-per-view again for $70.
Because you're thinking in terms of, at least I was thinking in terms of, when is he going to fight next? So am I going to get two Canelo fights, or am I only going to get one?
Right.
I'm betting on me only getting one. You know, like, so fuck that. You know,
and
I like
the $100 thing anyway. I think that solves it. It's like, hey, dude, you could do $100 and buy and have the whole year. I think that's good enough, you know?
Yeah, for sure. It's just, I guess. They just must not be doing that well with the fucking subs, but I'm sure it's picking up. His deal with, I mean, Eddie Hearn, I don't know why, so nobody's been able to pull off that many people in a stadium. Canelo goes to him. Looks like Eddie Hearn's doing pretty well. I don't know. Or are they just looking at that like it's
credit.
COVID?
I mean, there are factors because this is the first full fight, you know, in about a year and a half that you could fully fill, but you got to give him credit. I mean, right before, the fight itself didn't go down as a major fight, but think about the big event look to it, though. The ring walk.
Huge,
Like you said, I mean, it had that vibe of
and
a
wouldn't
big,
it be
big
harder
fight.
To get people to come during this time? Not easier? Like, you know, like you
no,
can like,
remember,
look at it from that perspective.
Yeah, but the factor is they've already done
boxing.
A couple. And that, right, but there's no other sport that allowed a full capacity yet besides UFC about a month ago. So this is the first time that was full capacity.
70,000 is a lot, though, man. I think he's only done like 50. Right? Only 50 has been done.
Yeah, that's what it was, 51 or whatever, right?
That's
I'm not discrediting.
Awesome.
I'm just saying, like, I know a guy from Minnesota that was visiting Texas, and I told him about the Canelo fight. He's never been to a major fight, and he said, dude, people are wanting to go. Like, it's just like going to Miami. I'm going to Miami this time. Well, they had to shut down the curfew shit like we talked about.
Oh, yeah.
Because so many fucking people went there. Well, that doesn't happen every spring break. It only happened because people want to get the fuck out. So it's a combination. I'm not taking any credit. The look of it, dude. The look of it,
he was on some UK shit.
The ring walk, dude. I mean, everything.
It was
awesome.
Like younger
it
people. It wasn't your
fight.
Typical fucking, you know, the
That's
types of
saying.
Shows the Top Rank puts on. Like, it was a little bit different. It was fucking younger people. I was like, how the fuck? I was like, did he pay these fucking people to fucking come? I was like, how the fuck did he get these people to come in here? What the fuck did he do? You know, how the hell do you get? I mean, I know a couple people in Dallas, you know, a bunch of nurses, and they don't know anything about fucking boxing. And they went to the fucking fight. They're getting fucked up and going there and going out to some bar afterwards and shit. It's like, I wonder how, I mean, Eddie Hearn must have skills because Oscar didn't do it. Bob Arum hasn't done that. No one has done that. And to do it right now, he's got to get a lot of fucking props for that because that's pretty fucking awesome, you know. It should at least send like set some sort of trend. The show that he did here in Miami, I think that was small, right?
But it was 25%.
Yeah, but people in Miami don't give a shit. You see during the Heat games, you see him fucking leaving
even
fucking hard. Like no one gives a shit.
Yeah, or coming late, whatever. Yeah, like. Yeah, even the Hurricanes game, if you're not number one in the country, they could give two shits, you know.
It's true. Yeah. So what is your – so your views on Caleb Plant, so you just think it's going to be a really, really close fight? You don't know who's going to win between him and Caleb
really
Plant?
Close. No, I don't think it's super close. I'm not calling for a 7-5. I'm going to call what I call for Saunders, but actually Plant doing a little bit more and winning another round.
Oh, but Canelo's still edging it out?
Oh, yeah. I have Canelo winning that fight. I think the second half of the fight's going to be different. But, yeah, I think he'll land more punches, and he'll actually be 3-3, or at least, because remember I said 2-2, 3-3, so I could feel that. Well, I actually do think it will be 3-3 at the halfway point with Plant, and then I think it'll be different. I think that Canelo will make enough adjustments. He'll land a bigger power shot. And I'm not going to say he'll break him down and stop him. I just think he'll break him down enough to where it'll make. I don't know.
Like, he's clearly losing a few rounds at, like, towards the end.
Right. Yep.
But
you know, I saw
you know, like,
in some of these fights, you know, like Uzagatagi
yeah.
did win the last part of that fight pretty strongly. You know, he didn't win the fight. The knockdowns were big. I just think that you're gonna see when Plant scores and lands a punch. I think that'll be a difference.
Yeah. I think this will be like more like, it'll be
pot shots.
Yeah.
Like you said, pot shots and jabs. Those will land.
Yeah. Chance for a draw if you know, Plank wins 7-8 rounds for sure. But even just seeing this, there's a couple last things here. It's like Benavidez. Okay. Well, what we noticed with Canelo, but we don't really know exactly if it was him just taking a break, just chilling and whatnot. When Billy Joe was throwing more, Canelo was, you know, he wasn't, you know, he was, you know, sort of just studying them and like, you know, he wasn't coming back. So, but that to me, that sort of suggests that do you need offense, you know, to keep Canelo, like to stop Canelo, like, so we are, that's what everyone that is behind Benavidez thinks, but
yeah,
I just think that
jab, he's going to throw punches. He's going to mix it up. Yeah. I mean,
he's so stationary though, that he's just going to get knocked the fuck out. You know,
him.
I mean, you know, he might get knocked the fuck out though, Benavidez. It'll be a good fight, but he's just standing there. His fucking feet are too slow. He's too stationary. He's got great combinations, fast hands. But he's just there. So,
yeah,
you know, like, so Canelo
style.
Just outbox him and just land big shots, like, you know, all night, and Canelo take some punches. But I think that the Plant fight will be a little bit more, like, Benavidez might get, I mean, I don't know what to think about it.
Yeah, it's,
you know what I mean?
It is you're right. It is a different style. I think people are more pumped up because they know that it's going to be a good-ass fight, too, like, stylistically.
Canelo's whole thing is countering. His whole thing is countering, and so, like, Benavidez is going to be throwing these punches and getting fucking countered. Fucking countered with, like, you know, every shot is, like, he's trying to fucking take your head off and shit because, you know, he's got these superpowers because he actually thinks that he really knocked out fucking Kovalev. So, like, I don't know, like, like, it's... Yeah, it's pretty crazy, you know, whereas the, you know, Plant is going to be, you know, one shot at a time. Interesting,
yeah.
Though. I'm going to be keeping in touch, whatever the next bigger fight is. I'm going to be keeping in touch, but, you know, I didn't want to.
Yeah, 2 weeks.
Two weeks
on ESPN. Ramirez and Taylor for the Undisputed on ESPN in 2 weeks. Just a heads up.
Yeah. Yeah, something to look forward to for sure. Please give us more, guys, please.
Yeah, I hear that.
That was awesome.
All right, buddy.
That was awesome.
Have a good night,
man.
All
right, man. Appreciate it, man. Thanks for the time.
Take it easy.
Peace.
Yes, sir. Peace. All right. But there's no matter what people think of Eddie Hearn and whatnot, I said this at the opening part of the show, too. I mean, and I understand that Canelo Saunders didn't cross over as far as viewership. But we get that. We get that. People don't know Billy Joe, right? But when I say people, it's like the common boxing fan. We were talking about this earlier. The common, not even the casual, but the common who do keep track of boxing, but they're not anywhere near hardcore. But the look, the feel of it was a big event. There's just no way around it. No matter what you thought of the matchup going in, the look of it, man, the look of it. Like I said, I really want to see... You know, every event, especially a stadium event, has, you know, comp tickets. So that's just – but I want to see what these – the ticket – you know, you get them in Texas. So we'll get the numbers back and break them down. But definitely got to credit Eddie Hearn when it comes to that. Regardless, like I said, there is something to do with, you know, not having a full capacity in so long and just wanting to get out and go do something, you know, that plays into it, but they're going to have a lot of chances to do more of this. So, and as far as it's funny because on the same breath, we can't forget Eddie Hearn said this wasn't even possible to do a stadium fight and this, that, and the other. And when we talk about ticket sales, remember, Like, we know that boxing's not popular here besides, you know, what we just mentioned, Mayweather, Tyson, Pacquiao, Oscar, all that. But, like, big, big crossover guys I'm talking about. We still don't know what Fury is after that Wilder fight. He may have crossed over more than we thought. You know, you never know. But the reason why it ended up at the MGM normally, big fights, Mayweather, Pacquiao, and all that, is because they outbid it for the licensing fee, you know, for the fee, for the rights fee. They just outbid them, the site fee. That's all it was. Like, two separate times, you know, the Cowboy Stadium lost to the MGM, you know. That's all it is. It's not that they, it's not that Mayweather and Pacquiao couldn't do stadium stuff. It's just, if you can get 16,000 tickets sold, you know, you can't do a $70 million gate in a stadium. Now, I mean, they barely do that for the Super Bowl. And this is in boxing. That's the most popular sport in America by a long shot. So that's why, you know, it feels, you know, on one hand, if you pay $50 to go to a stadium, you're, it's the atmosphere you're going for. And you're looking at the big-ass screen. And so it's the vibe. It's the feel of it. But if you want to pay $200, $300, $400 and way up from there, then that's why. That's the only reason why. A lot of people used to say Mayweather couldn't sell in stadiums. That's a bunch of shit. It was just money. That's all it came down to. Whereas this scenario is different. Vegas isn't even fully open all the way as far as putting, you know, now they do have, now I should say, they do have a full-on stadium now, though, there. So we'll see how that goes. And it is indoor, outdoor stuff. So, but yeah, credit. And obviously Canelo, I mean, you're not going to do this with without anybody. It's Canelo, too. So we got to give credit to Canelo as well. All right, so the Neri, Luis Neri and Brandon Figueroa fight coming up this weekend. I think it's a good fight. I think it's a good fight stylistically. Much like John was talking about, Figueroa just gets hit too much. He's too damn aggressive. But then again, a couple fights ago, Neri was too damn, you know, aggressive in a lot of ways. And he's not necessarily – I still wonder how good his power is at this weight class. Then again, it could be just an adjustment of going to 122. 118, 122 doesn't seem like a lot. It can be whatever. He's a small dude as it is. I just think his skill on the inside, his ability to move a little bit like he's actually shown in the Piona fight or whatever. You know, stylistically, he was stuck between styles. He was, I mean, some of these fights you're like, wow, I can't believe this is a slow fight. And he's not even landing great punches at times because he was stuck in that style, you know, with Eddie Reynoso trying to make him more responsible. And so that takes time. We saw that with Oscar Valdez too. His first two fights with Eddie Reynoso didn't go good. And maybe it's not a good fit anymore. And then that's the move on part that I don't know. But what I do know is Figueroa's style will bring out Neri's style at some point, whether it's the first couple rounds, mid rounds, whatever. And that's where I think Neri's just, even if he doesn't have the same power, he's got a plenty of pop, and he's just more skilled for it. He's more experienced. He's got a better resume. He still hasn't lost, and I just saw too much in that Seha fight. And I, you know, to say that he's going to lose this on the inside. And Figueroa, as John said too, we talked a little bit about this. I don't mean to rehash our conversation, but he's not going to use that 72-inch reach. I mean, maybe right away when he's throwing a jab or something and Neri's trying to time it, and that length will give him some problems or whatever, be it at the end of the punch or something like that. But it's, to me, I don't, and if he does, he's not going to be defensive responsible all of a sudden. But yeah, I like the fight. I think stylistically it's a fun fight to watch, no doubt about it. It should be damn good. And the winner, let's not forget about this Showtime schedule that they released. The winner has a date already set out, you know, in September. So we cannot forget about that. So, I mean, that's a good vibe. I like that they did that. I like that they do that. Like, okay, well, we already know. I mean, obviously, if they have a draw or whatever, we know that. Fulton is chilling September 11th. Fulton, the winner of this fight gets Fulton. And, you know, even if you do get a cut, you got – I mean, that's not until September, so you got time to heal. As long as there's not some kind of major ACL, knock on wood, or something that's going to put you out for 6 months, that's another cool thing about this fight. We know who they're fighting in the winter. So, I mean, that's pretty dope. But I got Nery. I don't know. You know, if this was 118 and that power was just evident, I'd say he's going to knock him out. I don't know if he will here, though. I got to admit, I don't know if he will there. I could see more of a TKO stoppage. But I like Nery in this fight, you know, when push comes to shove. Couple other news items to get to, a little boxing Twitter. We are going to go, you know, out to – actually, you know what? Let's see right now. Portland, where are you at? Are you ready to roll right now? I should ask that, because maybe this will – you can fit into the schedule that you got going right now. If you need 5-10 minutes, cool. If you want to, you know, if you want me to go to you right now, that's cool too. I just texted you in case you're not listening and you're working right now. So you let me know. Sean Porter recently just got bumped down to number 2 from number 1 in the rankings for the WBO belt. Now, a lot of people already went down the line of he's Crawford's mandatory. Well, yeah, sure, potentially he is, but he's not mandatory until he's called. They call the mandatory and put in the, hey, you got this time period to negotiate, otherwise it goes to purse bid. Now, some people are like, well, Sean Porter hasn't asked for that, because you can't talk them into it. Obviously, you can if you're Canelo or a big name, like he did, you know, put his name in when that the WBC belt, the Benavidez dropped on the scale. Came into play, that bacon belt. Boom, I'm on their top of the list. That's different. But when it comes to this, remember what happens when you do call or when you get it called. We know the purse bid scenario is going to be bullet. Whatever, whether it's 70-30 or 75-25, even 60-40, that shit's not going to get the fight made here. You know? And then some people will say, well, Al Haymon could just buy it. Cool, but in order to get Porter paid like he's got to get paid and Crawford get paid, like that doesn't line up, because if you outbid someone for it, then you got to pay some more money because of that percentage. So if you buy it for whatever, 5 or 8 or 10, it's still funky, you know? It's still – so that shit in – like for Virgil Ortiz, who's number 1 now, I wouldn't be surprised if they call it. Virgil Ortiz get a fight, and then he fights in September or whatever. That doesn't matter as much to him because he's not established yet. So he would be gladly taking, you know, a smaller amount of money. You know what I mean? He's not as big a commodity. That's not to say Porter's a huge commodity, but he does have a value to him, especially, you know, Crawford at welterweight, that resume. Or lack thereof. It just is. It just does. You know, he's been in a lot of big fights, a lot of big crowds. Some viewership, some pay-per-view, blah, blah, blah. One of the best fights of the year a couple times. Like, Porter's been around the block. So, but it is funky. Number 1 against number 2. They flipped it, and now Virgil Ortiz is the number 1. Do you remember when Porter lost to Brook? Kell Brook, he lost his belt to Kell Brook in the IBF, and he got... Was he like 15th, or did he get knocked out of 15th? I can't remember. By the way, what 310 was saying, Mark, and all that, I don't agree with all what he said about UK fight fans, or not fight fans, but the fighters. There has been a little bit more animosity the last couple of years, especially with the Wilder AJ stuff and Kell Brook and, you know, Golovkin, Kell Brook, and of course Spence. There, you know, Kell Brook came over here and beat Porter. You know, that type of thing. Like, there's been a rivalry built up, and I love it. But we did have a couple years there where, you know, these UK fighters were going to take over the sport, and it just hasn't happened, and that's just a fact. And, you know, we can have fun with the rivalry. Why wouldn't you cheer for your countrymen? It's stupid not to. It's great. I mean, hey, if you love a fighter, you love a fighter. Who cares? But I love the rivalry. Most of the people I run into, whether, you know, at a fight or online, you know, that I've known for a while, I have a good rapport with UK. I love it, you know, totally. But there was this rivalry built up. And now, as you see, the Eastern European / Uzbekistan takeover is going to happen. That's the newer one. Not all that new, but, you know, and you got a lot of white reporters saying that shit here. Like, it's going to happen. And if it happens, it happens. That's cool. But, you know, a lot of it was just, well, Kovalev got screwed. That's it. He won the first fight, which that's fair. But he didn't win the second fight. It wasn't the dirtiest fight you ever saw in your life and all that shit. And he got hurt to the body so many times before that, before any kind of low, like these crazy low blows that they talk about. And so that's what it is. I don't agree with him that all these, you know, the word Eurobum has been thrown around so much, and a lot of people say it's jokingly. Some people mean it. I don't do the bum thing personally, but the takeover didn't happen. That's just the bottom line. And a lot of it was just driven by Eddie Hearn. And, hey, man, he's a good promoter. He does online, his online presence, and what they do for viewership at IFL TV, his podcast, his interviews, you got to respect him for that. But it does, in the matchroom team he has around him of reporters, you saw that with Billy Joe Saunders this week compared to Daniel Dubois. Dubois was a quitter, this, that, the other. Now, lucky he can see for Saunders. So which one is it? A lot of biasness in the U.S. and U.K. media skewed, and that's just how it goes. But I'm just being honest with that. Like, you know, Eddie Hearn has said a lot about the U.K., but then he's not bringing the biggest fight that they've ever had, the way he says it, to the U.K. Now, I understand why that's the case, because of money. We get it, but that's not what he was saying not too long ago. But, you know, he's a promoter. That's what fucking promoters do. Oh, let's get to Frank Warren, though. Speaking of, Frank Warren mentioned just a little bit of an update that I think is actually somewhat worthy. I know people are just freaking sick of it. Just today on ESPN, they scrolled, it's going to happen these dates. Well, hold on, dude. And no, we don't know it. Those are the dates they're targeting. Just like on BoxingScene.com, Fury Joshua targeted to land on August 7th or August 14th, confirms Hearn. Now, those are the dates they're looking at, but that does not mean it's done. And that's what it was scrolling today. Literally, it scrolled on ESPN today. And you know how many times that's happened? That shit gets, you know, casuals and, of course, hardcores just pissed off. It's like, dude, enough is enough. You've been talking about this for so long. Just wait. Can you wait? And I know that's not his style, but it actually kind of, people start to get sick of it. But here is what here's what Frank Warren said about why the contracts are not signed. We know we were just talking about licensing fee and all that, and obviously when it comes to anybody, but especially the Middle East, because, you know, we've, and I don't mean that it's not like some kind of ignorant racist statement or anything like that. What I mean by that is Dubai or wherever, you know, numerous times we've heard of this stuff and the money isn't there. Really just one big fight's taking place there. You can count Amir Khan if you'd like, but only one big, huge purse licensing fee, site fee has actually happened over. No, it's not to say this one won't happen. They're dealing with the same folks, so that's a good sign. I'm not ripping that, but we just saw, if Aaron was telling the truth, it's a big IF, if, but think about it. I mean, that shit just fell through. $40 million or $50 million just fell through for the Crawford-Pacquiao. Like, this shit falls through a lot. So, of course, Frank has every right to say, well, we need to know if the money's real. But here's what he said. I'm on Seconds Out to credit them.
Give us an insight then in the difference between all parties being agreed in theory but not actually having signed and where we are now. Why are the guarantees not what was expected.
Well, it's not the guarantee. What it is signing for the amount of, is a guarantee for the amount of money that's being paid. And until somebody actually, you know, until there is a, until Tyson is satisfied that the money that's in that contract is guaranteed by a bank, then it ain't going to get signed.
So that's the issue. It's the source of
the problem. That's the main issue. Yeah, that's the main issue.
Which, you know, of course, you know, and you'd think by now, you know, because supposedly they, you know, they're entertaining offers and this, that, and the other, but they've been talking about an agreement since last summer. So, yeah, it does get old, you know. But in the same breath, Eddie, you know, Eddie makes a good point on, you know, hey, this shit does take a while, you know. And he had some comments where he's like, dude, it's the same people. We're going to get it done. Shut up, dude. Just calm down a little bit. We're going to get it done. But the thing is, Eddie's the one that's saying it. But here's what he said to Sky Sports, you know, talking about the money and the guarantee and all that. He said, I wasn't just intending to take a punt on it. It's a lot of money. We've done this before. Of course, financially, we need to make sure everything is in order. You know, but when you can't blame people for saying what the hell's going on when you're the one that keeps bringing it up like it's done. You know, that's there's a difference there. You know what I'm saying? There's a difference. So it goes both ways, Eddie. It goes both ways. You can't just have it. All right. Let me see here. We don't have much time. Let me make sure that Portland's queued up to make sure he's good to go. Somebody asked me what was the text that I sent, and this is boxing Twitter stuff. Them British orbital bones are built different, and that's obviously a joke. You know what I mean? I thought it was pretty funny based off what he was saying. You know, it's just a joke. Yeah. All right, let's go out to Portland in 503. And hear one of the best anthem. Portland 503, what's going on, buddy?
Mexicanos al grito de guerra, el acero aprestado y el bridón, y retiemble en sus centros la tierra al sonoro rugir del cañón.
Yo, what up, Chris? Yo, I'm doing good, man. This, you already know, bro, it's the Mexican anthem hit. You know what it is, me? You know what it is, brother? How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing great, man. I mean, that ring walk, the ring entrance, just the whole thing was just phenomenal, dude. It put me in a great mood watching that stuff, man.
Yeah, hell yeah, bro. You know, shout out to the Familia Aguilar, you know, their family, you know, they did the Mexico Lindo anthem, you know, that's Canelo's. And they also did, if you want to know, he also did El Rey from Vicente Fernandez. And that was the song that, if everybody remembers, that fucking Marquez came out to Pacquiao number 4. And I don't know, that means a lot to me
right.
That shit hit too. So, you know what I mean? And the way it ended too. And also, before we get that, I wanted to say also to the Mexican anthem. When it hit, there was a lot of criticism for the anthem. I thought she sang it beautifully. To me, there was no problem. You know what I mean? It was a big topic in the Hispanic media. You know what I mean? Because it was supposed to be sung differently, but she sang it, you know, her own way. And you know, to me, it sounded beautifully. I got no hate for it. You know what I mean? Because they're very critical, bro. You know, if you see all the Mexican media out there, the Spanish anthem, if you know about it, you know, but other than that, she did great. You know what I mean? I just want to give her props because she, you know what I mean? I don't know why, it was such a great moment, such a great night, you know, it doesn't really matter. You know, the anthem was, you know, it was hit, it was there, it was sang beautifully. So, at the end of the day, it was just nice, but I just wanted to give that, Angela Aguilar, her props, you know what I mean? Cause she definitely deserves it. And as far as the fight, man, you know, but this fight, man, you know, like you were saying, the Mexican anthem or when the Mexican show, man, for Canelo, you know, he made BJ Saunders wait a couple of, you know, few, like,
yeah,
minutes.
He did.
support. You know what I mean? He for like a
yeah,
show
did.
And everything. You know, it was so awesome.
He's like, hey, you
and
want,
shout
you
out
want
to,
a 22x22? You're going to have to wait a little bit.
Right? He got it. He got his wish. So, you know, there's no excuses now.
He did.
And, you know, shout out to all the gypsies and all the British people. You know, I loved I texted you earlier, Chris, like the build up. I loved how the father was talking about gypsy magic, spells are being cast.
Yeah.
Tyson Fury was talking about some shit like that too. I was like, holy crap, I love this. You know, I love this whole brujeria, witchcraft stuff. You know, some people believe in it, some people don't. Obviously, he paid for it with that black broken orbital. What they say, I believe he said he broke it in three different places. What a beautiful, counter from Canelo. The way he set it up, had his head forward and then came back up. For him to, you know, just to fall into that punch, man. And wow, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe how fast that eyes, like, just turned purple. Like, right after that glove touched his eye, just immediately. I couldn't believe it. And Canelo saw it. He saw blood. And and if you know, he mentioned right as soon as the bell rung, he went to his corner and he talked about Teddy Reynoso. He wasn't going to come out of that ring or back out of that corner. You know, he said he wasn't going to come out. And look at that. He didn't come out. And you know what I mean? I don't know, man. He quit. Everybody has their own opinion. We're in a different era of boxing. To me, all the legendary fighters, I mean, you know, call it what it is, bro. I mean, Brandon Rios, what's his name? Margarito. I mean, Miguel Cotto, you know, Eric Morales, you know, what's his name? Fernando Vargas. They all. You know, they all had to go through fucking heat, man. But at the end of the day, it's about finishing a fight. I'm from a different mentality where I believe, you know, you got to gut it out, because it's all about respect at the end of the day. If you went to 12 rounds with a broken eye, and I think you get the respect and love from all the boxing fans, including the Mexican people. But just out of that, it's just, I don't know, it didn't look good to me. He did face a lot of criticism because of what he said. And, you know, for his fellow British fighter or British fellow mate over there, Daniel Dubois, we all saw that eye, how he got criticized for that. But I don't know, man. I just want to say he did what he had to do, but Canelo got the win, and that's what it's about. And, man, and I just want to say, man, I just want to say how proud we are for this Canelo, man. I just love how it's boxing is all Mexico, bro. It's just this is our sport. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, Canelo pound for pound, baby. That's what it is, man. Orgullo Mexicano, man. This is it, dude, bro. I just love this moment in history right now for boxing because when we right now it's dope, man. And also too, like the this week, man, we got, you know, the Heartbreak Kid Figueroa versus Luis Mir, another New Mexico versus Mexico, man. I mean, it's still continuing, man. It's all of May, baby, all of May. So as far as that, my prediction for us for that, you know, I got to go with the Heartbreak Kid. I just believe he's a little bit better. Luis Mir, I believe he's good, he's solid, but I just feel like he's a little too small for him. But we'll see. I don't know. We'll see. But it's going to be Mexico versus Mexico, Mexican-American versus Mexico. So this one should be fun. I'm staying tuned to it. I would tell the casual fans, the MMA fans, to stay tuned to this one because this one's going to be fire for sure. I mean, the Heartbreak Kid, he always brings the heat, man. The brother of Omar Figueroa. We all saw what happened to that poor guy last weekend. So, you know, shout out to the Figueroa family. And also, too, I know we got – in 2 weeks from now, we got the big one to finish it off, man. Ramirez versus Taylor. This one is going to be for Undisputed. It's going to be sick, and I can't wait for that one. But, man, it's going to be solidified, man, all Mexico. And also, too, if I could say finish it with hopefully there's no BS. Coming into the planned fight, I hope everything is solid. I believe both men are free schedule wise. We know what's the name plan is with the PBC, but you know,
yeah,
hopefully
no
they
excuse.
Can make it. There's no excuses now. You know what I mean? I just wish the best. I hope both sides are happy with negotiation. If I could give a prediction, I just feel like it might not be on the Zone, but it might be on its own independent pay-per-view, not PBC. Maybe a collab with PBC because we've seen PBC with Fox But if I had to give a guess, I believe it's going to be a Zone Independent pay-per-view, you know, for I think just to clear both sides, you know what I mean? Because I believe Plant's not going to want to go to the Zone, and I believe Canelo's not going to want to go to Fox. You know, I think they're just going to meet in the middle. And, you know, like I said, there's no excuses. Like you said, Chris, there's no excuses, you know what I mean? Now it's the time to make it. Like we all know, Canelo said this is the road to undisputed. And also, too, let me finish it off with saying boo-hoo Andrade. Man, poor guy, how he got escorted out of the fucking press conference. Canelo calling him a horrible fighter, man. Man, I'm loving this English side of Canelo, too, man. I love how he knows exactly what to say and at the moment what the fighter is going to react to. You know what I mean? It's clever. It's awesome. And, you know, it's only going to get better. And also, too, Eduardo Hearns, man, he did his thing. I think Canelo and Eduardo Hearns, you know, I think it's an awesome collaboration. I hope to see this relationship keep going. It's obviously a better relationship than Golden Boy because, you said, Chris, it was like an amazing event. I mean, like it was just beautiful. Yeah. Like you said, like the show, the music, the crowd. Oh, like, dude, it was just all Mexico, man. All Mexico.
Everything.
And also, too, before I get out of here, man, I just wanted to say I thought it was all downhill for BJ Saunders when the weigh-ins happened. And I heard no bell horns, no British fans out there. You know, there's only one Billy Saunders. You know, you didn't hear nothing, bro. He was in Mexico. It was all fucking Spanish over there, man. Shout out to mi gente, Mexico. We did it, bro. We're always going to do it. This is our year.